The Firebirds Fan Zone podcast is brought to you by Kyle Garman Realtor. Whether you're buying or selling, whether for your forever home or that quiet desert vacation getaway, Kyle Garman and the team at Keller Williams have the experience and skill to make the process simple and convenient. Check them out today at kylegarman.kw.com. Our podcast is also brought to you by DesertDefenseLawyers.com, DUI and criminal defense throughout the Coachella Valley. The criminal justice system is scary and confusing, but relief is just a click away at DesertDefenseLawyers.com, where we've been keeping folks out of the penalty box since 2008. The Coachella Valley Firebirds are bringing the Valley closer together, and the Firebirds Fan Zone podcast is your weekly dose of everything Firebirds. If you have suggestions for guests or questions you'd like answered or anything you want to add, be sure to leave them in the comments. If you like what you hear, please remember to hit that like button for this episode and be sure to subscribe. So if you're ready, here we go. Let's get into it. 3, 2, 1. You probably know Grant Fuhr as the hockey analyst and color commentator for our Coachella Valley Firebirds, but how much do you really know about this Hockey Hall of Famer? Before we get into this amazing episode, let's take a look back at his legendary career so we can all have a deeper appreciation for just how lucky we are to have him here in the Coachella Valley and part of our Coachella Valley Firebirds fan experience.
Over the line, shifting in.
I would have to say Grant Fuhr was the quickest that I ever saw. He had these amazing cat-like reflexes, pucks that you think were going in, and all of a sudden, you know, he got his pad over, he got his glove.
He had the ability to keep himself calm in big situations. Was a real pressure goalie.
The timing of his saves was absolutely spectacular. In the third period, no matter how he played the first two periods, he would make the big save.
He's an 18-year-old native of Spruce Grove, Alberta. He plays for the Victoria Cougars and the Western Junior Hockey League. Wherever the Cougars are playing, the scouts are there to view his progress.
In 1981, goalie Grant Fuhr was drafted in the first round by his hometown team, the Edmonton Oilers.
Grant had a great glove hand, very intelligent. There was no question that he wasn't going to be a great player.
The Oilers had joined the NHL just 2 years earlier, but they already had the game's best player and a supporting cast of budding superstars. Their freewheeling playing style made them a juggernaut on offense, but left their goalies exposed.
He was a perfect goalie in temperament for us. Wasn't worried about statistics, didn't care about goals against, didn't care about anything other than winning.
I like the philosophy. You know you're gonna get 3 or 4 goal cushion to work with. I could make a mistake here or there, and I'd get away with it. My job's just to keep it one less.
Fuhr won an NHL record 23 straight games his rookie year and earned a reputation as one of the NHL's best clutch goalies.
Nothing fazed him. Didn't bother him that he gave up a bad goal to make it 5-4. When the game was on the line, he'd flash out that glove and make a save, and you're like, whoa. And then here come the Oilers.
We came in after the second period, and we were down 4-2. It didn't matter to who. You'd look around the room and say, guys, they're not getting any more. So my eyes would go, bing. And we go win the game, 7-4.
In the 1984 Stanley Cup Final, Fuhr set the tone with a dominating shutout in Game 1 over the 4-time defending champion New York Islanders. The Oilers won in 5 games and repeated the following year, thanks in part to Fuhr saving 2 penalty shots.
We were all young. We all kind of meshed at the same time. The guys, you were closer to them than you were to your own family almost.
In 1987-88, Fuhr played in 75 of 80 regular season games, took home the Vezina Trophy as the league's top goaltender, and helped the Oilers capture their 4th Stanley Cup. That summer, a blockbuster trade sent Wayne Gretzky to Los Angeles. Fuhr would leave 3 years later. He played for 3 teams in 5 years and was thought to be past his prime when he joined the St. Louis Blues in 1995. Fuhr had a resurgence that year and helped turn the Blues into a contender.
He was on a mission. And he had one of the most amazing years of any goalie I've ever seen.
Fuhr played 79 of 82 regular season games, an NHL record for a goaltender.
I really believe if he did not get hurt against the Toronto Maple Leafs in the first round, that we would have won the Stanley Cup that year.
Fuhr never fully recovered from damage to his knee ligaments. He finished his career with the Calgary Flames, retiring in 2000 as one of only six goalies with more than 400 wins. A seven-time All-Star, he was inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame in 2003, the same year his jersey was raised to the rafters just down the road from where he grew up.
To get in the play in the National Hockey League, you try to make a difference every chance you got. I enjoyed putting the stuff on every day, and I enjoyed winning more than anything.
Firebird's goal!
Scoring his 13th goal of the playoff.
The captain, number 17, Max McCormick. Assisted by number 19, Cameron Hughes.
Welcome to the Firebird's Fan Zone with your hosts, David and Kyle.
Wow, that's pretty good. That's strong.
Just tell us when to go. Rocking and rolling? Once again, we're rocking and rolling.
All right, man.
Again, as usual, I don't even know what episode this is.
It really doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter. Nope. I know Thanksgiving's coming up. That's my only point of reference.
So excited.
We have an incredible episode for you today.
Really excited.
With a surprise guest you can see right there. But before we get to it,
yep.
Always, first things first.
Yes, you guys, I mean, without a doubt, we're so humbly thankful for everything you've been doing, supporting us. We're watching the videos climb through the roof. We're seeing the subscribers definitely start climbing. I'm going to have a
challenge. Well,
yeah, a challenge, a Christmas wish, if you will. I'd like to reach 300 subscribers by Christmas.
Oh, that's...
Yeah.
I would, too.
But since we're at Thanksgiving and we're being thankful, super, super thankful for everybody. We both are. And
just share it on your socials and hit that like button and subscribe. And
absolutely.
Leave a comment. Leave a comment.
Okay.
A good comment.
So, Dave, normally, so the last couple episodes, I've been bringing in some snacks.
You were the snack monitor.
You have brought in some amazing snacks.
So, check this out. I got in contact with Gladys from Kettle Mitas, and you might recognize
that name.
You know it.
I know it.
First intermission, every game.
Every game.
You're coming back for second period with a big, giant bag.
Every game.
And so, it got me thinking, you know, anyway, she came in. We talked. Her story is so interesting and so good that we're going to have her come in the next few weeks.
I can't wait.
We could spend a whole episode on her
and
her story and what the Firebirds and what Acrisure have done for this out-of-the-home business that is now popping, if you will.
Oh, good one.
So, but she gave me a couple samples. I'm like, dude, really? I'm not going to have some popcorn?
Can I get in on this?
So we have the regular movie like buttered popcorn,
right.
And we have the kettle corn, and like, I'm just
this is like game day.
Out of respect,
this is like game day.
Grant, feel free to get on in there if you want.
Are you a buttery guy or kettle guy?
I'm any kind of popcorn guy.
All right,
narrative.
I like that.
Love it.
I like that.
So,
don't mind me.
Oh, yeah,
I'm gonna spend a minute.
Oh,
my word.
In case you haven't figured it out, we have our, and I don't use the word blessed like ever, much less ever, but I'm using it today to have
strong.
We, may I say, and I don't want you to like, you know, float away, but we are in the presence of greatness today. We have Hockey Hall of Famer Grant Fuhr, who is, if he doesn't mind, we are going to just dive deep into every single thing we can with you today.
All you can find.
Yeah. Can you do that? Now, it's worth noting that if you go back to the like mid-80s and you watch a news interview with Grant, you might get a word out of him or two.
If you're lucky, you might get
two. Or a head nod, maybe.
Have you always been a quiet guy?
Quiet and peaceful. Keeps you out of trouble.
Well, not today. So we are going to go after it today. And every episode starts the same way. Who are you? Where do you come from? Tell us about your childhood. Tell us your story.
Who am I? Right now, I'm an old guy.
But older. You haven't reached old yet.
Yeah, we ain't there yet.
Miles.
Yeah.
We go by miles.
We got some miles. Yeah,
old,
yeah, yeah.
Not yet.
No, the knees are actually young. They're new.
The aftermarket, yeah.
The upgrades.
Getting better by age. No, actually, I'm just a young kid that played hockey growing up in Spruce Grove, Alberta, and got to play with a bunch of friends, and then got fortunate enough, move away from home to play junior out in Victoria and got drafted to go back home to play pro. So one of those fortunate people that actually got to play the pro game back at home.
Well, that's a really long, short story.
How did you get into hockey? What age?
I started at 4. But you know what? Everybody plays in Canada because there's not a whole lot else to do in the winter. So that's the key is when it's cold and miserable, you go play hockey. And we played 7 days a week. And I've got a lot of teachers that will tell you that I was at the rink 7 days a week. May have bypassed the odd class.
Okay.
Bad student. Good hockey player. So.
Fair enough.
Get to where you need to be. At what point did you realize that it was more than just fun for you, that it was in you?
When I retired.
Really?
My sole goal playing was to have fun. I wanted to enjoy going to the rink every day. And was fortunate enough that I got to do it from the time I was 4 right till I was, when I finally surrendered, about 38. So I enjoyed going to the rink every day.
Now, when you were coming up, though, it was the 70s-ish, right?
Well, I played junior in the 70s.
Played juniors in the 70s.
I turned pro in 81, so right out of grade 10. So needless to say, we were a little preoccupied and didn't finish school.
Clearly preoccupied. It worked out for you, though.
Which it paid a little better than school at that time, too. So
I would think.
But no, I just a born and raised love of hockey.
Who turned you on to hockey? I mean, I know you're saying like that's just what you do, but I mean, did your dad play? Did you have uncles? Who was your major influence that got you in on the pond with the skates, just doing the activities and maybe showing you the ropes a little bit?
My dad played a little bit. I had uncles that played. So it's kind of a family deal. You go out in the back pond of the farm and you skate. And then all the kids I grew up with, we all played together. So
it's just what you did.
It's what we do.
I love it.
So can we just get rid of the elephant in the room? Because late 60s, early 70s, relatively rural Canada. Can we go into your childhood? Can we talk about being adopted at 18 days?
Sure.
Which is an incredible, touching story. Your mom's name is Betty, right?
Yes.
And if I remember the story right, they were looking to adopt. The people, whoever the adoption people are, come to the door with you in their arms.
I guess they got stuck with me.
And she basically fell in love with that little baby right there and then. But given the time and the era, it presented some challenges for racial reasons, right?
Well, the great part about being 18 days old is you don't know any of that. So that's the beauty of it. And all I looked at it is I got adopted by a loving family. And I may have got chewed out for playing as much hockey as I did, but at the same time, it was supported the whole time.
And that's what matters, right?
That's what matters. And they drove me, playing in rural Alberta, you cover miles. Mm-hmm. And they took the time out to chauffeur me around all over the place, and they sacrificed so that I could play the game.
And how long after they adopted you, and I know they adopted your older sister, Debbie, right?
Actually, nope. She became my sister. She was from a different family.
Oh, even more amazing.
So, yeah, they adopted the two of us, and she kind of got the bad end of the deal because I got run around playing hockey everywhere.
Mm. Did she have a thing? Was she, I don't know, spelling bees or?
No, she just.
Drama or anything?
Just normal. Mm. So, no, I was the only one that created the headaches.
All right, so at what age did you decide, all right, this is my direction. I'm not going to be a welder or a ship's captain. This is what I'm doing.
Oh, I probably figured that I wanted to do it at about 6 or 7.
Holy
but that's, wow. That's, everybody dreams of playing in the National Hockey League, especially if you're a Canadian kid. And played because I loved it. I loved being at the rink every day. If my parents would let me, I'd have been there from morning till night, which most days we were. So I got the chance of living a dream of being at the rink all the time. The rink just happened to be on the school grounds. So that created
I know you cut class.
It's Canada. I mean,
We didn't call it cutting class. We just a deferred class.
Oh, I like that. That's really good.
Our vice principal, a gentleman by the name of Oris Tate, if we weren't there for roll call, would walk out to the rink to see if the guy's missing. We're all on the ice, and of course, we were all out there playing shinny.
Well, there's worse place to be, right? I mean,
we could have been in a lot worse places.
Heck yeah. But, so at what age did you realize you were different than the other players? That you you know, are starting to, your game was better, you know, quote unquote, like when you started seeing that separation, at what age do you all of a sudden you're like, oh, I might have a shot at this, or I'm different than these other, my peers?
I just kept playing with older kids. Smart. I think that was the biggest thing. Yeah. And back then, minor hockey didn't have limits on, you had to play with a certain age group. So there was times during the week where I'd play with two or three different age groups because goalies were hard to come by.
So you've always been a goalie?
Day one.
You never tried defense, offense? You just
way,
I'm,
way
I'm,
overrated.
I love it. I like that.
No, why goalie from day one.
Why? I love that.
I mean, that's, you know. Well, nobody wanted to do it. That was the first thing, is nobody wanted to do it because we played in an outdoor rink, so it gets to 20 below. But not very much fun standing around. But the equipment looked cool, and I decided.
Yeah, so this is the 60s, 70s, right? What was that equipment like compared to today?
What'd we have?
Yeah, like rolled up newspapers.
It looked like catcher's gear, right? Almost. Like that's,
it was about as thick as catcher's gear, too.
Oh, so. God. Yeah, no wonder nobody wanted to be between the pipes.
One, you froze your toes every day.
Yeah, and then you're taking shots with towels on. I mean,
yeah, things hurt once in a while.
Yeah,
was it pre-mask time or just the Jason mask time?
More Jason mask, and a lot of times you just wore a road hockey mask.
Oh man,
so you never worried about getting hit, or that's just part of the game.
So there's a yeah, that's a toughness that I think. And I want to touch on this later as we talk some more, but it seemed to me, the more I learned about you and we did our research and the more that people had talked about you, the mental toughness that you brought to the game was, I think, your separator. Is that fair to say?
It definitely helped. I mean, if you look at the pain side of hockey, we've got a fairly high pain tolerance, but it's also a mindset that if you don't let it bother you, you can still play. And even when we were coaching growing up, you were either hurt or you were injured. You can play hurt. You can't play injured.
Oh, so, that's going on a side.
Sorry, I had that. My son, being in the room, same thing. I used to be a coach for him, and he played a lot of football, and he was very aggressive. His mindset was very similar. So my questions to him were of that. Are you hurt or are you injured? And that was the standard.
That's when you know whether you can play or not.
Exactly. I'm just hurt. I'm like, okay.
And actually, once you turn pro and you're injured, then they can freeze things and you can still play.
That's true.
You got the doctor right. Yeah. The doctor right there.
Yeah,
for sure.
Especially back then.
So I'm going to hold you now because Kyle asked you, at what age did you know your skill wise that you actually? Everyone dreams of it, but at some point you're like, shit, I got a chance here. When did you realize that it was something you could actually successfully pursue?
I never really worried about it. I played for the fun
really?
Of it. Yeah, I just played for the fun of it. And every couple of years, you'd advance, play with older kids. And when I got to junior, I figured, okay, this is fun. They're actually men. I'm still a kid. So, yeah, you're playing with good players and such. And then I ended up getting drafted to Edmonton. And while I went to Edmonton, they had... Andy Moog was there. He'd come off the great playoffs with Montreal. They had Gary Edwards, Ronnie Lowe, Eddie Mio. So they had a bunch of goalies that all had NHL experience.
Sure.
And then me dragging along.
How did that happen? How'd you get – you got to sign up something to be drafted. Like, how did that happen?
No, it's just a draft. I mean,
they picked
Victoria.
You and said, hey, you, over here, we're picking
so
you.
So junior, they reach out to your parents and say, hey, would you be interested in coming out and that sort of thing? And – a gentleman by the name of Kenny LaRue had reached out to my parents to see if I'd be interested in going out to Victoria. And I'd never left home at that point, let alone move away to play hockey.
Sure.
So I went out when I was 15, the first camp I went out just to skate with them to see if I would actually like it. And it was actually kind of cool.
And what was it? Was that juniors?
That's junior.
Okay.
So you're with guys that are 19, 20 years old.
And you're 15 at the time.
I was 15 at the time.
Wow.
So training camp was good. I actually kind of enjoyed it. But then at that time, at 15, you know you're going back home because you're not old enough to play in the league.
That's right.
So no real stress, no real pressure.
You're having fun.
You don't really realize that you're moving away. But at 16, I went back and ended up staying. Now all of a sudden, it's a whole new animal. So
what changed for you?
First time I was away from home. So you get a family to live with, and I had a great family. So that's half the battle.
We spoke with
you gotta have good billets.
Yeah, Cole was sitting in the chair, and he talked about that. I think at age of 14, he went and lived with a different family and started to develop and do those sort of things. And so at a young age, there's a separation, I think, that happens with your
parents. Well, you learn how to function on your own.
Wow.
More than anything.
So you grow up pretty quick.
You don't really get a choice. If you're going to play hockey, you got to grow up pretty quick and figure things out on your own. Because, well, for me, my parents were a 12-hour drive away.
Oh,
so it's not real close.
And so I asked him this question, and let me ask you this, because it sounds like you had great parents. How hard was that on your parents to see their young boy go and live somewhere else and to be 12 hours away?
Probably harder on them than it is on me.
I would think so.
Because they're not having fun every day.
They're not having fun every day, and I've got 18 new friends.
Yeah.
So, and of course, when you're junior, and Victoria was a great spot to play junior because it was the only game in town. So now you've got the run of the town, and there's a lot of interesting distractions that can let you forget home.
Such as.
Do you want to talk about any of those interesting distractions?
Okay, if you don't. Some may be of the female persuasion.
They're out there. Okay.
So, but yeah, no, it was a great place to play. Let's just say.
You had a good time.
We had a lot of fun.
Well, there's nothing wrong with having fun. We like that.
The game's supposed to be fun. We made sure it was fun.
Well, and it's interesting, too, because I feel, and you touched on it, that you grow up a bit. And I've noticed with the players as young as they are, the ones that we have now, I mean, they're very well put together.
Can't barbecue, but
some are still learning. But Christmas is right around the corner. There's a great cookbook. I might have to send
Mikey Riker a quick cookbook.
Yeah. Well, you ruined it. But yeah, there was a person I was going to send it to. But
well, they know. They know. They're watching. They know, you're right. what we're talking about.
You're right. So, you know, but honestly, I've been blown away by how mature and how, you know, I don't know if that's grooming or if that's just part of
it. It's part of leaving home more than anything.
Okay, that's great.
I mean,
makes sense.
Some guys are book smart. Like I played with Randy Gregg, who turned into being a doctor. He went through medical school while we were playing together. And then there's others that are street smart. So it's all kind of figuring out your way from the time you're 16, 17 years old.
Wow.
You said it changed. You went back the next year at 16. It was a whole new ball game. Other than leaving home, what was the difference maybe in your mindset or your stress level?
Not really a stress level. It's our coach at that time, a guy by the name of Jack Shoup, ran the program like a professional organization. You practiced at 11 o'clock in the morning. You trained. You did everything that the pros were doing, which meant that, oh, by the way, no school. So, which some of the guys would attend a class or two in the afternoon, but you didn't have to if you didn't want to. You could live, breathe, and die hockey. Well, for me, that was perfect. School and I never really got along, but I could live, breathe, and die hockey, which I can still do.
Were you first man on, last man off the ice?
First on, last off. And love being there and love being around the rink. And even as a kid, I worked at the rink. So
what'd you do?
Everything. We wash floors, clean toilets, the whole nine yards. And now the rink's actually named after me. So,
no kidding.
Yeah.
So that was your space. That was your safe space.
That's my spot.
That was your happy place.
I, to this day, I still enjoy going to the rink and spending time at the rink.
The smell of the ice, the cool of the air.
Never going to ask about smell on the ice. There's something about that smell, right?
It's just a good feeling.
Yeah. All right, so you are, now that you're in Victoria and you are headed for the NHL draft, how did that come about? How did that happen?
So my second year, I got an agent, a guy by the name of Frank Millen.
That's really good with names.
I know.
Reasonable memory.
I forgot your name today earlier.
So
I didn't.
But anyway, he said, hey, there's a chance you'll get drafted. The draft's in Montreal. Would you like to go? Okay, that's kind of cool. Never been to Montreal. Pretty good place to go check it out. So I went to the
also
draft.
Distractions and, there.
Yeah, good city. No question. So, yeah, no, we went to the draft, and you don't know if you're going to get drafted or not. I mean, goalies don't normally go in the first round.
And you went eighth overall.
And we somehow snuck to eighth overall to a place that already had a whole pile of goalies.
At what age?
Let's see. When I was drafted, I was 17, just turning 18.
Jeez. And you got picked in the first round, eighth overall.
Eighth overall.
Did you finally realize at that moment you were different?
Well, I figured I was going back to play more junior. So going to training camp, I just went.
The only guy in the room that doesn't know how great he is the guy sitting in that chair.
Never really worried about it. if you play it and you enjoy it, it takes all the pressure off of it.
Yeah, that's great.
Which, that's what you try and do, is alleviate all the different variables.
Mm. So, they name, who was number seven, do you remember?
Oh, that's a better question. Dale Hawerchuk went one. I'm trying to think, who went nine? James Patrick maybe went nine, or John Van Beesbrouck, one of the two.
So whoever was number seven, they get named, and you're probably watching it.
Toronto, I think it was Toronto that picked seven. It might have been Fred Boinstruck.
Okay, I believe you. We can Google it. We can look it up.
That one you'd have to Google. That's a guess.
Were you expecting to hear your name next?
In Edmonton, no. Edmonton had lots of goalies. That was the last thing in the world I expected.
And what were you doing in that moment? Were you like doodling on, like, what was...
No, I was actually...
You found out.
I was actually sitting with some of the guys. There's a few of us from Alberta that all had a chance to get drafted, so we were all just kind of hanging out. And
were you at the draft itself in the auditorium?
Oh, yeah.
Auditorium?
Actually, it was at the Montreal Forum. So we were just sitting in the stands, socializing. And somehow we managed to be the first one of the group to get picked.
Wow.
What did you do when you heard your name?
Tried to figure out where I was supposed to be.
Where do I go?
And was it like football where they have a jersey with their name on it already and hand it to you?
No, they just walk you down to the table at that time. We were pre-TV production. Yeah.
Was mom and dad with you? Are they in the building? Are they?
Nope. I'd gone
any
with...
Any family?
No family. Just had gone with some of the other group of kids from Alberta.
Sure. Okay.
So it was good.
What was their reaction?
Yeah. Well, they both went in the first round too.
Mom and dad.
Mom and dad were good.
Mom and dad. Like, you had to make that.
They were surprised. They were as surprised as I was.
They make that.
Remember that call?
Yeah, bits and pieces of it. But I think everybody was pretty surprised. But the good news is most of my aunts, uncles, friends all had season tickets.
To the Oilers.
Yeah. Otherwise, it could have got really ugly really fast.
So what happens? The draft was on like a Saturday, right? Or whatever day it was. What are you doing the next day? What happens the day after a draft?
Fly home. So we get on a flight with Rod Phillips, our radio guy from Edmonton, and Marty Ruff, myself, Mike Moeller, Randy Moeller. A bunch of the Alberta guys flew back and might have had a beverage or six on
six
the way.
Or seven to ten.
Huh?
Well, Rod never loses his briefcase, but he managed to leave it on the airplane that night. So it was a pretty good flight.
There was a celebration going on.
I would imagine.
Heck yeah.
So what is a 17-year-old kid thinking about other than hammering rums on the plane? Like, what's a 17-year-old kid thinking about on the way home having been picked, now realizing, oh, shit, this just got real?
My life changed.
You're not thinking at that point.
Really?
You're just celebrating and... You're just happy you got picked. It's when you get to go meet all the management and all that and talk about your first contract.
What was that like?
It was interesting. It's not something that you really ever think of. And back then you weren't getting rich. But
at that fun.
But for what I made, I thought we had the world by the tail.
Sure.
So
how much is a contract for
in 1980?
When you get signed.
What did I get? I got $45,000 my first year.
Are you serious?
Yeah. In 1980 dollars, though, that was...
I suppose.
It's good money in 1980.
Yeah, a lot of dollars.
I suppose. I'm just...
It was more than my parents were making.
Like,
so
a Mercedes was 22 grand,
true.
So...
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, things were a little
different. You could buy a brand new car for $3,000 or $4,000.
Yeah, that's right.
So 45 was pretty good. I got $12,500 to sign. So all of a sudden they hand you a check. Now you get $12,000 in the bank.
Just here you go.
Yeah.
17-year-old young man. 17
years
old,
you're feeling pretty good about it.
12 grand.
Were you even old enough to have a bank account?
You get one pretty quickly.
Good question. Yeah. Yeah. Dad comes with you, you know, helps you fill out paperwork.
So what happened next? Like, what goes on? You know, all right, get yourself over there. Here's your hotel room or whatever. Practice is tomorrow. Now what?
I was living at home then. That's the beauty. Getting drafted back home. You get drafted back home, you get to stay at home, so it's an easy transition.
Beautiful.
So that's the fun part of that. And then you go to training camp with no real expectations, thinking that there's already six guys that are ahead of you on the depth chart.
Yeah.
You figure you're going home, you're going back, play another year in Victoria, and hung around, played a couple exhibition games, and then they said, well, you should probably get a place. I said, well, I've already got one. I can stay with my parents.
So you're a pro hockey player staying home with mom and dad?
Yeah.
It's a pretty good deal.
That's not bad.
You're not spending money on rent.
Right. If you got the comforts. Mom's cooking.
Everybody's.
I mean, that's amazing. Because a lot of these guys don't know how to even cook. Yeah, they get on their own. They have no idea. I mean, we've touched on it. But a lot of these guys literally don't know how to finish for themselves.
You kind of spoiled the first few years. You got your Anne Murray poster or whoever they have in Canada. Down here is Farrah Fawcett. I don't know what they have in Canada.
Back then.
That's messed up. What? So what is the life like for an NHL rookie goalie on a team that's got a pretty, you know, significant depth chart for goalies? What's a rookie season like for you? What was that like?
Once the year gets going, you're just playing. I mean, you're playing just trying to survive because you want to stay. You're not really worried about anything else. It's all about, okay, what do I have to do? And you just follow the veterans.
Speaking of veterans, you had a young man on your team who anyone may or may not have known just how amazing he was going to be.
He was okay, I heard.
But you had number 99. You had Wayne Gretzky on your team when you were a rookie. How long had he been in the league by then?
Gretzky came in 79, I believe. So I think he'd been there 2 years.
A couple years in.
You had a young squad. The whole team that you came into was a young...
Yeah. I mean, I was the baby of the group, and the rest of them were 2 to 3 years older than I was.
And that wasn't nothing. Yeah.
So we were all learning together.
And they were offensive juggernaut at that point, right?
We played different than everybody else. And that was the one thing that when I sat down with Glenn Sather, he's like, you're never going to have pretty numbers. So if that's what you're interested in, it's not a good spot. We'll score a lot of goals. We'll give up a lot of chances. But we'll win a lot of games. I'm like, great.
Perfect.
No problem with that. Everybody, to this day, is still my pet peeve. Everybody's hung up on stats. There's only one stat that really matters, whether you win or lose.
And you have a lot of wins.
Yeah, we got a few.
Well, that's the thing.
Contract-wise, they like stats. But
when I was, you know, we were doing our research a bit because, to be honest with you, I didn't know a lot about hockey until last season. I mean, I only knew a handful of real names. I kind of watched ESPN, pay attention before the Firebirds came along.
Not much hockey in the desert.
No. Well, I mean, I'm also from Washington State, so there wasn't a lot of hockey there. There was a junior team there, but, you know, that was almost an hour drive for me. So I didn't really pay attention. There wasn't a lot of anthem, you know, hey, hockey, hockey, hockey. So I, again, we've talked about this on the show. I represent kind of the desert.
The newer fan base.
So I'm learning.
It's addicting, isn't it?
Oh, my gosh, yes. Holy crap. The first game I ever saw was in L.A. about 5 years ago. I was hooked, so that's why I said yes to the Firebirds when they said season tickets are going to be available. Do you want to be a part of it? 100%, you know, all in. But what was cool when I was looking at some of your younger footage and some of your interviews, you know, you do talk about winning being the only stat that mattered. You know, you were also – talking about how you're okay with giving up those one or two goals, but the one goal that you're not going to give up is the game winner.
Yeah, that's you got to make the one save that makes a difference.
Yeah.
And it's all about, it could be at any different point of a game. It's all about being able to read the game and timing. Mm-hmm. And I was fortunate enough that I figured it out early and managed to drag it along for a little while.
And I heard it was pretty infectious throughout the locker room because you would tell the boys, we're not losing this game. And you would make sure of that.
The one thing that people forget is, with a goalie, body language is everything. You give up a bad goal, your shoulders sag, they see that.
Ooh, talk more on that, please.
Let's go with a for instance right now.
Please.
Take a look at Edmonton. When they struggled at the start of this year, the goalies gave up some goals. But as soon as they gave up a goal, they went from being an offensive team to trying to protect. Well, that's not what they do. They're an offensive team. They got to play that style. So as a goalie, even if you give up a goal, if you just kind of fish it out like it's no big deal, they don't change the way they play. And that's the key as a goalie, is you don't want the guys to have to change in front of you. You want them to be comfortable, play the way they want to play, and body language is everything.
When did you know that part of the game?
I figured that out in my early 20s.
Did someone teach you that, or did you have to just observe
No goalie coaches. It's all learning it on your own. That was the other thing. My first goalie coach, I'd already been in the league 13 years. So all of it was self-taught. lots of good guys to talk to. Like Ron, I had Ronnie Lowe as my roommate my first year, who'd been in the league for 8 or 10 years already. So great guy to bounce things off
Andy
of.
Andy Moog was no slouch either.
Andy was great. Yeah. Good friends with Glenn Hall, another Hall of Famer who'd been around for a long time. So guys I could bounce stuff off of. But you're literally learning on your own.
All right. Now's a whole new friggin' trunk we're going to unpack with that one.
I know.
Because that's one of the areas we really want to dive deep on is that, because our audience base and us, mm-hmm. and, you know, there's so much going on that we're watching, but that we don't see. So I definitely want to, I want to get back to that. But the very last thing I want to talk about your rookie season is your first game between the pipes, you were what? 18. And before that, you were the youngest starting goalie since like World War II, right? When 17-year-old, I don't know, Apple Cheeks or somebody, whatever his name was.
Oh, Harry Lumley.
Yeah, did it. But you're there, you're in the net, you're like, okay, I'm 18, I'm an NHL goalie, there's 17,000 people in the stands. And who's taking the face off but Wayne Gretzky, who by his third season, you knew who was who. What was that like? Because I think what you're about to say was, I don't know, it was fun.
No, you're in a mad panic.
But what was that like?
Your first game, you're in a mad panic.
Yeah.
And one, I got to do it in front of friends and family. So out of the 17,000, I probably knew 10,000 of them.
Right.
Which doesn't make it any easier. Because if you take a look at all the guys that have played in their home cities, most guys struggle. Because there's the added pressure of being a hometown guy.
Did you feel it?
No, you knew it, but you just found a way of just kind of putting in a different compartment. Just play.
When you close your eyes, can you remember that moment?
Yeah, because I lost. So I think we lost to Winnipeg 3-1.
Yeah, but, you know, that was one of hundreds of games, so
it went pretty good after that. I think we managed to go 23 without a loss after. So it was okay for an 18-year-old kid.
All right, fair enough. So since they're probably still thinking about it, we're still thinking about it, we'll get some of this other, we'll go back and forth in time. In the net, and I think what Kyle was starting to allude to is there's a lot going on in front of you. How are you in 1981 or 82 keeping track of that and responding to it versus how are they doing it in 2023? Is it any different?
It's a little bit different. I was fortunate enough that I had good reflexes. So you had to learn to read the game, but I was fast enough that if I had a bad read, I could react to it. So it may have looked a little more helter-skelter than it actually was.
Give us an example of what a bad read looks like. Like, what is that?
Well, if I think the puck's going somewhere and I start to cheat a little bit and move, and it's going somewhere else, now you got to be able to change directions all in a matter of half a second, which... The fun part is most people can't do that.
Yeah, I heard that's one of your strongest attributes was your cat-like reflexes, being quick to recover, being quick to just all of a sudden, there's the mitt, you know, pucks in it, in the glove, bam. I mean, it was one of those things that you were known for.
Fixes a lot of mistakes.
Heck yeah. So you had really great reaction, really.
But by my third or fourth year, you learn to read.
Okay.
So then you can read and react, and all of a sudden you look that much quicker.
And the game looks easy. It feels easier.
No, it's still the same. Okay. But it looks easier because you've got a better grasp of it. So now you actually look faster just because you've read it quicker.
Okay.
And what are you reading? Are you looking at the puck? Are you looking at the head, the eyes? Where?
All the above.
At the same time.
You're watching five guys on the other team trying to figure out where they're going to go, where they want the puck to go, all in a matter of a split second.
I just imagine like a Terminator eye just trying to figure it out.
Didn't Ed talk about that a bit?
He did.
Yeah.
But I didn't believe him.
No, well.
No, I did. I believed you, Ed. I'm just kidding.
Yeah. Ed Hehouse was.
Have you sat behind the net yet?
No.
Wait, no. There's what you need to do. One game, sit right behind the net. Because then you'll get to see the speed of it and how it develops. And
I've never thought to do that. That's
Then you can switch for a period.
Yeah.
If there's anybody out there, go ahead and message us on Facebook, Instagram. You can even comment. If you're willing to switch seats.
We'll switch
and get behind the net. This is the only time because Grant, because you mentioned, because I'm superstitious around, I have to be in my seat. I have to be in my section. There's a certain order of things that has to take place. I'm one of those guys. Okay. But for this, because you said that, I will do that. I will switch, and that would be interesting perspective.
For any first or third period.
There you go.
Or maybe second, so we can see what Driggs is doing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Either way, doesn't matter.
Oh, great. Second period.
Yeah, we'll do second period.
It just gives you a different feel for the game, and then you realize how quick it actually happens.
Yeah.
And how it's that much harder to read it quickly with different bodies moving in front of you and around you. And
you're kind of a quiet guy. I mean, just by nature, that's just kind of, you know, off ice. Were you super vocal on ice? Because Ed also mentioned that the goalies have to be.
Oh, no, you got to talk to your defenseman.
And you yelling at people?
My first year, I was probably pretty quiet. But as you get a little older and you start to figure out where you're supposed to be and what's going on, then you're trying to help them as much as they're helping you.
So you got into that pretty.
You figure it out.
Nice.
You had to figure it out, right? Because there were no goalie coaches. There probably weren't many books on the subject. Like you wrote the books. You created the thing.
You learn on the fly.
Literally. What was the hardest part to learn for you, do you think?
Well, you're learning, besides practicing every day, you had the travel. I mean, we flew commercial my first 11 years. So there were no charters. You get to the airport like everybody else. Went through security like everybody else. The only difference is you had to wear a tie, which was miserable. But
did you have a clip-on?
No. Oh, no, if our guys found you had a clip-on. But, no, you're learning everything all at once. So you just, once the game starts, the world kind of slows down because now all you have to worry about is the game. But outside of the game, you're worrying about talking to people, the media, how you're supposed to deal with them, trying not to stick your foot in your mouth.
Did the teams have anybody to help you with that, or were you on your own?
Our coaches did a good job of trying to help us with that.
But you didn't have a media department. You didn't have PR. You didn't have people.
We had a PR guy. A guy named Bill Twilley, who was great. He bailed me out of I stuck my foot in my mouth once. I may have said something about the fans.
What was allegedly said?
Yeah. My second year, I didn't get off to a very good start, which happens to everybody, apparently. But I didn't get that memo. So I may have called the fans a certain term of jerks.
You called the fans out?
Yeah.
In an interview?
Oh, yeah.
That's a no-no.
That's always a really good thing to do at 19 years old.
I hope that's on YouTube. I am so going to look for that.
Really?
Yeah, it didn't turn out real well. Yeah.
So...
If I can find it, I'm going to edit it in right here.
Oh, yeah.
And then we'll see.
And then, I know it's there. I've seen it.
Right. But you're just a kid at that point. I mean,
front page of the paper. It was wonderful.
How'd you live that down?
I get to go to the minors for 5 days to get a breath of fresh air. Yeah.
That was the punishment back then?
It actually wasn't a punishment. It was basically to get you out of town so you could breathe for a little bit.
So they did it more for them than for you, right?
More for your peace of mind so that it doesn't continue to steamroll.
So basically it's to separate you from the situation so you can just collect yourself again and then...
Yeah, get restarted.
Just have to go to your room. Just go to your room. Go to your room for a week.
Yeah, pretty much.
Right, you know, Dave's the guy with the sign, right?
Go to your room
sign. Go to your room sign?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's pretty much what it was.
Yeah. So you had to go to your room and think about what you did.
You know what you did.
You know what you did. You're sorry.
And then, not really.
Just say it and get over it, yeah.
But winning definitely cures all.
Yeah, and that's the best part.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, the next day they ask, well, did you mean it? Well, if I said it, pretty good chance I meant it. So Glenn said at times, like, that's not the answer.
That is not the answer, yeah.
I'm like, but if I take it back now, then...
You're a hypocrite.
You're not being true to yourself.
Yeah.
He's like, well, you should come to my office. I'm like, okay, great.
Ooh. Bring your duffel bag.
Yeah.
Bring your bag.
So the next day I get a little plane trip to Cape Breton, Nova Scotia.
That sounds desolate.
That's even worse.
It just sounds desolate to me.
So.
Because you know they didn't have a McDonald's there.
There probably wasn't
I have to sit and think about that.
There probably wasn't a lot of fun things to do.
Yeah, not a lot of, what'd you call it, distractions?
Distractions.
There was no distractions.
No distractions in Nova Scotia. Yeah.
There was hockey.
That's good enough.
The good part about it was Mess's dad was coaching out there. He was coaching our farm team. And I had played for Mess's dad in junior.
So Mark Messier? Growing up,
yeah.
Oh, Mess. He just calls him Mess.
So growing up, I had played for his dad.
That's cool.
So stepping into that was fine.
Oh, yeah.
It was comfortable then.
So you could clear your head and kind of get back and hit the reset button.
And just play.
So you guys were really successful, right? You know, there was a time there where you were on a team that was, you know, really successful. How did you manage all of that, you know, with the media and the people, the attention? Plus you have Gretzky. You guys are just, you're rock stars.
We just played.
None of that mattered.
We just loved having fun. We had fun on the ice. We had fun off the ice. And that's all we cared about. You're like, what, 20 guys that are all one big family.
Mm.
And we did everything together. We wandered everywhere together. If there was mayhem.
That brotherhood was there.
Yeah.
Who was the biggest prankster on the 1982 Oilers?
82.
Because that was your first year, right? Your first season?
81, 82, 82 yeah.
82, yeah. Who was the biggest prankster?
Who do we have then? Probably Semenko.
Who?
Dave Semenko.
Okay.
Semenko.
He had the good sense of humor.
Yeah? Any examples?
There were some things that are most entertaining.
I like how you keep everything to the chest.
Got it. All right, that's okay.
He really keeps it tight,
we have to dig into it.
I like that.
I'm going to confess. So when I knew you were coming on, I've got some very close friends that are longtime serious hockey fans and people. And I said, hey, look, if you could ask Grant any questions, what would it be? And then I'll sprinkle them in. And you just brought up one, right? My buddy David Borsari, my mentor-in-law, one of my very best friends in the world, he wants to know if there are any Gretzky stories, basically I think he means you and Gretzky stories, that you've never told anybody that you can tell now.
That I've never told anybody.
It's a big ask. I like
it. I know,
it.
Right?
That's bold.
I
love it.
No, just that he was the first player I met as an Oiler.
He was the first player you
met? He was at the draft. So he was the first player I met, and we get a chance to spend a little bit of time together and have stayed friends ever since.
And anybody who spends 30 seconds with you, and we learned this at the casino last season when you were kind enough to stop and take a picture and chat for a second.
Yeah.
You're just the freaking nicest, like one of the nicest guys we've met. I'm not just saying that because you're here and you're eating our popcorn. I'm saying because, you know, I genuinely, that's our observation.
Absolutely.
And I get this sense that Wayne Gretzky seems like the same way.
Nicest man in the world.
Outstanding. I love to hear that.
And that's the best part, normal.
Gino was talking about when he was in the office, when he had came to visit, and how like he took pictures with like Fuego, which Gino thought was hilarious, but because he's like, I mean, he's Gretzky. He doesn't have to. Like,
but he does, because that's just the way Wayne is.
And he signs whatever and whatever needs to be done, and he's just there, and he's just genuinely a good dude.
He's just a good guy.
Easy to be around.
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
and fun to be around.
Yeah? He's got a sense of humor?
Oh, yeah.
Really? Okay.
Any stories you could tell about that?
No, we've just had a lot of fun over the years.
Dave, that's all you're getting, man.
That's fair.
All right, what do you got, man? I got to refocus my brain.
Well, again, when I going back and doing the research and doing the stuff, I found it very intriguing. You know, you guys, you know, you won a lot of Stanley Cups, right? What was the first one like for you when you finally got to hoist up the cup? I mean, I know you're like, and you're probably just going to say, "Well, it was cool. You know, I was just having fun." I mean, honestly, though, you've reached the mountaintop. You're going through all the playoffs. And playoff hockey, holy crap.
There's nothing better.
That is completely different than in anything that, you know, just from what I've witnessed from last season.
Whole different animal.
Holy cow, yeah. I loved it. my gosh. So you guys, you know, NHL level, you're grinding. You get through it. You finally get to hoist the cup. I mean, was there a moment of satisfaction or what was it, you know, what were you going through?
At that time, I was suffering because I didn't get run over in game four and it wrecked a shoulder.
Oh.
So we didn't get to finish out that series. But it didn't take away from the winning. There's nothing better than winning the cup.
I bet.
And part of the problem is you don't really take the time to enjoy it. Because you win it, you run around for a couple, 3 weeks of chaos. And
all
of a sudden, you're getting ready for the next year.
Because you had
the shortest break, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, did you get emotional that night, though, when the
there's a lot of happy, a lot of champagne.
Yeah.
a lot of, well, in Edmonton, we hung out with the crowd. So we didn't really hide. You went to the bars, you hung out with people.
No kidding.
Man, those days.
So,
yeah.
Yeah, unfortunately, players are missing out. You could take the cup to a bar, hang out. Some bars are apparently not supposed to go because it's for the page of the paper.
That happened?
We got a meeting, yes. Oh. We got summoned to the castle.
We got to the principal's office an awful lot.
You made the paper a lot for all kinds of reasons.
Yeah. It wasn't. The good news is, as a team, yes, we did. But we had a lot of fun doing it. The good part of a group like that is everybody plays for each other.
Yeah.
So the coaches don't have to really motivate you. Everybody motivates each other, and it makes for a great team.
Yes.
And it's all about team. So if you were to look at it like a chain link fence, the weakest part of the fence is a single link. You don't want to be that link.
So for the brother standing next to you on both sides of you, you're going to make sure that you are going to be the
strongest.
You
give them your best.
Ooh,
and they're giving you.
God, I love that.
And they're giving you.
And next thing you know, you're hoisting the cup with your good shoulder.
I love that.
So, perfect segue. Another one of my very, very good friends, and he was one of the goalies in the Bar League team when I played back in the 90s. A guy named Kevin Rose. He was my first paramedic intern, now one of my oldest, closest friends. His son, actually, I think Cameron, played juniors. His time there is done, and he's back home. But one of the questions that Kevin and his son Cameron wanted me to ask you was, when you got, because you got to take the cup home with you. Every player gets to take the cup home.
We didn't have the individual days back then.
Oh, you didn't have the individual days.
We were a traveling band of fools.
Got it. So they wanted to know what you did with it when you got it home, but apparently that wasn't
a thing. Traveled with 18 other guys. So if the cup was at your house, there was 18 other guys already there.
That's cool. And then, all right, did you ever drink out of it?
Oh, there's been many drinks out of it.
That's
different things, different drinks.
Nobody's asking specifics. That's just, I.
If you knew everything that had been in the cup, you would never drink out of it.
Yeah, that's what I've heard. Yeah, there's. You shouldn't do that. But
that's hey, but.
But you still would if you want it.
Yeah. Oh, but I wouldn't. It was at Akershire. I wouldn't even touch it because I haven't earned that right.
A lot of people do that. They will not touch that thing. It's like this.
Most of the players won't until they win it.
Yeah.
That's incredible to me. See, that's another superstitious thing that
it's more for me. It's more of a respect thing.
Really?
Right. If my name doesn't deserve to be engraved on it, then my hands don't deserve to be. And maybe I'm overthinking it and I'm making it more dramatic than it needs to be, but
a little bit.
I think that's just, you know.
It's just me though. Again, I didn't grow up with hockey in that same way. So that same kind of superstition, passion, respect. I mean, I hate saying it that way because it feels like I'm diminishing it, and I'm really not. I'm very reverent of it. I get it. It's pretty cool
to take a picture with and touch.
I think you touch it.
I would take a picture with it.
I mean, but how often, right? Now, unfortunately, I missed the opportunity to take my picture with it last season. Mm-hmm. I missed it, and I probably would have touched the sucker.
I'm kind of hoping it comes back this year.
I hope so, too, and I will be right there.
Listen, we'll take a picture of it together, and if I accidentally touch it, I'll ask forgiveness. That's it,
to
right?
Who? That's my question. To who? Yeah. Who's judging?
To the
you?
Hockey gods, of course.
Really?
I made that up.
Nobody's really judging.
Yeah. I don't think so either. I think we touch it.
Yeah.
We because for me it would be I'm respecting it. I'm like
Phil probably won't let you pick it up, but
no.
I'd
probably get removed out of the front page.
You can put your arm around it and take a picture with it. Okay, but I
can't.
You pick
I can't
it up.
Hoist it.
You know when it flies, it gets its own first class seat.
Yes, it does. Travels in its own little fancy box.
Yep. It gets its own seat.
Oh, well, now we're learning.
Yeah.
Now we're learning.
It travels better than we do.
Dang, really? I bet. That's so cool.
All right. What you got? What's that? I got to consult my notes now. Now we're getting serious. Now we're getting into it.
You know, we talk about – can I talk – I'm going to blend in a little bit with what the boys were – the Firebirds, you know, the boys last season. Because when you said each guy plays for each other in that way and there's that brotherhood – when Riker was sitting in that chair and Cole was sitting in that chair and other people we've spoken with, there was that sense last season, that team. And I'm not saying they don't have that right now. We'll get into this season, you know, in a bit. But last season felt like that as well. Like when you said we don't need a coach to get us fired up. The guys on the ice were playing for each other. And every single one of them had that same mentality and reflecting on last season because they were in Seattle. They had to travel together and they had to live together.
They talked about it.
Yeah. And so
easy way to describe it. You start your first 20 games on the road. The guys are together for basically 2 months, where you're away from your families, everything else. You're just the guys. They get that bond. Well, then you get a little success with that bond, and it grows and it grows. And the hardest part about the American Hockey League is there's always player turnover.
Yeah.
Because the deals are 1 year, 2 years. Nobody's got that long-term deal. So you're always going to get turnover, and it's trying to find guys that will slot in where they fit into that. And you're seeing that a little bit this year is the bond might not quite be as tight yet,
mm-hmm.
and a little bit slower start.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, now your expectations from last year have skyrocketed.
Sure.
So, and you can see it in the building. You can feel it in the building.
Absolutely.
Everybody expects it to be identical to last year.
That's right.
And they're like, wow, they're not winning and such. Well, up until last night, we were 6-4. Well, last year at the same time, we were 7-3.
Oh.
There wasn't a big gap.
It's true.
It just felt different.
You're right.
Because we didn't really see it.
We didn't see it till December 18th.
Yep.
You're right.
You're right. Not a huge difference.
Still figuring it out.
They're still figuring it out. They're still trying to mesh with each other, figure out who works best with who. And there's growing pains every year. That's the big difference in the American Hockey.
But do you feel like last year, you know, with those guys and kind of what you were talking about, you know, with the Oilers and how, like, is that bond?
You could see it.
You could see it.
Yeah.
And you're around those guys, and you know what that looks like, so.
Oh, no, you just sitting watching the games, you could sense it, and you can see it.
Mm-hmm. And what do you see now when you see this group versus last year's group?
This is a group still trying to find their way together. You see it in spurts, where they'll have some games where they're all world. And then you'll see a little bit of tough luck or the puck won't bounce the right way. And you don't see the same push that we saw last year.
Where, is it fair to even expect to see the same?
Oh, no. It's going to take some growing time. What are we, 11, 12 games in?
Yeah.
There's a long way to go.
Yeah.
But you got to figure they're 22 or 23 games before we even got a chance to see them last year.
Right.
By then, they'd had it all figured out. So we're still another 10 games before we see what the team's really all about.
And that's, I think, should be reassuring to all the Firebirds faithful that it's just, it's
patience.
Yeah. Don't worry right now.
It's a long season. They're figuring out. And even to your point, like you said, guys are getting called up. They're getting brought down. We saw, you know, Shane Wright and we saw Winterton.
Ryan Winterton.
And yeah, he went up, then they came back down, and now you've got Potsy. He's up now. So we're seeing a little more change happening right now.
You're going to see a little bit of change because Seattle's off to a little bit slower start as well. So with the two having slow starts, you're going to see more up and down.
Okay.
And it's just normal.
That's hockey.
And there's no crisis to it yet.
No.
You lose two at home, people feel like it's a crisis. But
I think we weren't used to seeing that, too. Like you said, when we got so spoiled. We talk about it a lot, being spoiled last season, because when they would play at home, they won almost every game at home.
Yeah.
So
and they might, going forward, they're just...
Yeah, we're not done yet, but I mean, yeah. It
what did we... First road loss last night. So we've been good on the road.
That's true. And that was weird.
I mean, there was a lot of weirdness going on in that game.
Yeah.
Did you watch the game?
I watched bits and pieces of it.
Yeah. So. Did you see Max and what's his name, Morelli?
I did.
I have no idea. Did you see what started that?
I didn't see what started it, but it was a good one.
And it only after when Evan pointed out that I didn't cognize on the fact that Morelli had played on the Bears last year.
Yeah.
So there might be some carryover there, huh?
Yeah. Might be some hard feelings from last year.
I love that. So. I can't, Max, please just you can DM me. I just want to know what was behind that story.
There was something there.
Yeah.
Can we talk about December 18th? I mean, since we're kind of in that pocket now.
Listen, we're all over the place. Let's.
Is there somewhere you wanted to go before I get?
We'll get everywhere we need to get.
Because
you're not in a hurry, are you?
No, I'm good.
All right, good. Let's.
Well, because, you know, we touched on that with everybody who sat here. And because everybody's perspective is different, even from the fan base perspective was different that night. So there you, Gino R., you're sitting in your chairs from the production side of it. But, I mean, what was
and
that like for you?
You hadn't done color commentary before that, have you?
I did it half a dozen times for HDNet when they first started up.
So not like, hey, a long this time is my ago. New job.
No, a long time ago.
Long time.
So maybe let's touch on that, HDNet. And then I want to talk on how we got into you getting into that side of it. So December 18th, what was that night like for you? The opening night?
Opening night. It was good.
The arena, the fans, the players.
Having been through some opening buildings, that sort of thing, Like, one of the first games I did broadcast was the opening of Phoenix's building.
So this wasn't the first time
I've seen buildings open. I played in Calgary when the Saddle Dome first opened. I played opening night there.
All right, so the question is, how do we compare?
I thought it was awesome. No, I think they've done a phenomenal job with the building here. I love the way the fans have bought in. Mm-hmm. And I think that was one of the big concerns, was you're in a non-traditional hockey market. Mm-hmm. How will the fans buy in? And we all know the Canadians are going to come. They're going to watch hockey. That's just what we do. But once the Canadians left, everybody was wondering, where are we going to go from here? And the first game, after pretty much everybody
that
moved
first
out,
playoff game
was, 4,200 roughly, I think.
Yeah.
And everybody's kind of like, oh.
Uh-oh.
Well, then all of a sudden it jumped to 9.
Yeah.
Then it was 10 every night.
That's great. And it was sold out.
Yeah. So good. And that's the part that excites me, is the fans have bought into it. And they're slowly learning the game, and you can tell that they're slowly starting to learn the game, and that's the part I enjoy.
I love the hell out of it right now. I love watching my wife and I sit and doing this show. We've learned so much. I've learned so much in talking with people who have been, you know, doing it their whole lives. So I'm really, really blessed, you know, to be able to now, every time I do this, we get to do, and then I sit in our seats and I'm watching the game completely different.
We see it differently now than we did just, you know, 6 months ago.
And I'm hoping people who
wait to get behind the net.
You'll
have a whole new appreciation for it.
Maybe Tuesday night, the
21st.
Yeah, let's give it a shot. Going into the opening night, right? You're on your way to the arena. You're driving over. You're doing whatever you're doing. What, if any, expectations did you have for this brand new building, brand new team, brand new market, which is probably the most unusual?
It's not a matter of setting expectations. It's just kind of waiting to see what it's got. I mean, I still have my same routine when I played. I like to get to the rink 3 hours before the game. I still do that just because it's habit.
Because they serve a nice dinner, too, I heard.
Yeah, we heard about those.
I actually don't go down for dinner. I eat before I go.
Oh, right on.
It's still habit. I just like to go, relax, and sit at the rink.
Nice.
So I've still done that. And the TV side of it, Gino knows the TV side of it. I'm still clueless as to half the things that are going on TV-wise.
Now, he says no. He says
the hockey side of it, I know.
You'll say that, but he's like, no, he knows a heck of a lot more. And he says you're getting amazing at it. He says you're
we're trying to figure it out.
Says you're doing great.
Your timing is very natural.
Yes.
For sure.
Yeah. How did you get roped into doing that?
They just asked if I'd be interested in doing something with the team. I was like, sure, I'd love to.
Wait, didn't you bump into Gino at Trader Joe's like 7 years ago?
Albertsons.
I've run into Gino all over the place.
Yeah.
And he's like, hey, would you be interested? I'm like, yeah, I'm going to go to the games anyway. So, and then talked to Tim and Todd, and they were like, well, we'd love to have you.
But you never did anything like that before, right? I mean.
No, but it's still hockey. I can sit and talk about hockey. So, awesome. And that's the beauty of it, is I can talk hockey all day. I still love talking about hockey.
Dude, the look on your face, you look like a 14-year-old kid still having fun.
It's fun to be around the game.
Yeah.
That's the beauty of it.
No doubt. For sure. All right, so let's jump back a little bit. You said that really young, you realized this is fun, this is great, this is what I want to do. No pressure, no stress,
fallback plan.
Yeah, no, exactly, no fallback plan.
Yeah.
But now you're a 6-time All-Star, a 5-time Stanley Cup winner. You know, what, looking back now, if you could tell that 14-year-old, what would you tell that 14-year-old kid?
That he probably should have got his ass in class a little more often.
Ooh.
But that's what I tell my kids. I'm like, I got lucky. There's no question. So they've all gone through college and got their educations and such. The sad part is my dad used to be a teacher, so I took a lot of heat at home.
Ooh,
but it's some interesting conversations.
But I'm sure the new car softened it.
Did you?
Once in a while.
I don't know why I'm going to ask this question. Maybe just, I don't know. Did you finish school?
No.
That, okay.
I've literally worked either in hockey or golf since I was 16.
And that's all we know.
I took 2 years off from the time I retired, where I did nothing just to kind of refresh the brain a little bit. Other than that, I've coached for 10 years after I played. It's 3 years
I'm
in Calgary.
That if you took a geometry class right now,
you would ace it.
I'd be lost.
No, I don't think. No, because the entire existence of a goaltender is geometry.
Right.
Angles I can cover.
Yeah.
Angles, so, yeah. Reflexes.
That's what
sports psychology. I still study that.
Really?
Yeah. That's what I do on the planes.
Have you always done that?
Oh, probably the last 25 years. So it's just something I enjoy and just a habit. Trying to figure out why athletes think certain ways.
What was that thing that Cole was talking about? A mental.
So they have
toughness coach.
Yeah, they have mental. Yeah.
Is that kind of what you're talking about?
So there's a couple of different guys that I've listened to a lot. Bob Rotella, who's really big in the golf world. Just some of his theories of why things happen, how athletes think. Another guy by the name of Jim Aframow. Same thing. He works for the San Francisco Giants. Just different ways and how of turning everything into a positive.
Mm-hmm. Russell Wilson was like that too. I paid a lot of attention to him, obviously being from Seattle. So I was always curious why he was so successful in the way he was, because he's not a traditionally built QB.
He's not a big QB.
No, not at all. Especially coming in the league, it's just like. But he had this mental toughness. Yeah.
But the funny part about the mental side of sport is, if you tell somebody to do something simple, every night before you go to bed, the last thing you do, have one positive thought. It's amazing how hard it is for people to do that, because your mind wanders.
So it's hard to control the mind.
Yeah. It's the 6 inches between the ears. It's the hardest muscle to train.
I believe that.
And
that's
it's
fascinating.
Were you able to capture it? Are you able to do that now?
I'm able to do it now. It took a few years, but yeah. I'm able to do it now.
Yeah.
And every night, do you think a positive thought before you go to sleep?
Before I go to sleep.
So can you coach me for a second? How do I do that?
So when you finally go to bed, turn the TV off and such. Can you turn the mind off?
I try to shut it down for sure. I try, but
as you're trying to turn it off, try and think of all the positive that's happened during the day. Eliminate all the negative. Just think of all the good things. And sometimes people have to write it down. But you try and think of all the good things that have happened through the day.
I think
it'll get into a habit.
So that's what it is. It's building the habit.
Yeah.
Because
you think the negative stuff pops in easier than anything.
Yeah.
That's the one thing that naturally pops into your head. You can do one negative thing and 50 positive things, you'll think of the negative thing.
That's right.
That's the first thing that jumps into your head.
Yep.
So it's trying to reverse that thought process.
Interesting. It's true. I mean, I try to go through my on a daily and have reflective moments, and be positive and have those moments of gratefulness.
Yeah.
But I think the hardest part, because I'm one of those people, I'm wired in the way that I hate losing more than I like winning.
Makes two of us.
And you do take the things that you didn't accomplish in that day probably exacerbate those probably more than they need to be, because
it's what automatically pops into the mind.
Yeah.
Because you're trying to figure out, okay, well, how do I fix that?
Yes.
Instead of taking the good and saying, okay, how do I build on that? So it's just a matter of trying to get your mind to focus on the positive side of it instead of trying to rehash the negative side.
I'm glad that you shared that, because I think there's a lot of people listening and
watching.
I feel
like it's hard to do.
It's harder than people think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds really easy. And if you told people, okay, write down 10 positive, 10 negative, the negative would come right away. The positive, they'd have to sit and think about it, because you don't normally focus on the positive.
Yeah, that's true.
Let's try it tonight.
I will.
I'll try tonight.
Oh, I'm totally going to. Yeah. Yeah. And I'm glad that you shared that with me, because I think there's a lot of people watching and listening are going to take from this.
Works in sport, works in life.
Mm.
I'm going to tell my daughter about it. She's studying psychology in college, and she wants to – she's thinking about sports psychology, but doesn't know what that means exactly. So now I can tell her.
It's funny. I didn't know that, because my daughter's studying psychology as well. She's going to be a family therapist.
Yeah. Well, so was my daughter, but then she realized she didn't want to sit and listen to people's problems all day long. So, not so patient, my kid.
Oh, that's good.
And don't worry, she's not even going to watch this, so I can say whatever I want.
That's so funny
about her.
That's good.
If you're enjoying this episode as much as we enjoy doing it, please remember to hit that like button. And if you haven't subscribed yet, now's a great time to hit that subscribe button too. And remember, turn on alerts so you never miss an episode. And last but not least, Take a moment to share the Firebirds Fan Zone podcast with your Firebirds family and friends and anybody who loves our birds as much as you do. As always, the Firebirds Fan Zone podcast is brought to you by Kyle Garman Realtor. Whether you're buying or selling, Kyle Garman and his team at Keller Williams have you covered. Visit him at kylegarman.kw.com. And by DesertDefenseLawyers.com, DUI and criminal defense throughout the Coachella Valley. Attorney David Givett has been working hard to keep folks out of the penalty box since 2008. Now, let's get back to it.
Okay, so just kind of jumping around a little bit, and I don't like to kind of keep harping on this, but I am curious about it. I know they probably are. And you are way more humble than I had hoped. but there was a period, you know, right around 1987, 88, 89, when you were regarded by many publicly as the best goaltender to play the game. And even the arguably the greatest player to ever play the game, Wayne Gretzky, agreed with that. How does that manifest in your ultra super humble brain?
It's just something you try and build on. I mean, obviously you're doing something right if everybody thinks that. So you're trying to figure out, okay, well, what am I doing right, and how do I build on that, and how do I continue that?
It never caused you any, like, you know, chest puffing or
no
head enlargement?
That's the beauty of being a goalie, is the minute your head gets a little big, you give up 10, and all of a sudden it's right back to where it belongs. So it's a very humbling position.
Very humbling position, I'm very sure. I've noticed, we're all over the place. I watched some film of you, you know, some highlight reel of you, and your style was very different.
Not very pretty, was it?
No, it was not pretty at all. You were hopping and a jumping and a moving and a swiping. And you would jump up like a cobra, take the puck right here, somehow manage to control the rebound. But I just don't see modern goaltenders play that way anymore. Like, why? What changed? What's different about the game?
They're not as athletic. And the equipment's better now, so you're not worried about where you get hit. Back then, everything hurt. You wanted to get it in a spot where it didn't hurt as much. Again, I relied a lot on reflexes. So as I get older, it looks a little tamer and a little calmer because I've read things a little better, but still had the athletic ability that I could still do that even into my late 30s.
Do you think the equipment now makes a substantial difference?
A world of difference.
My brother Bob, again, he was one of the guys that I asked to send questions, and he may not know this, but he was my inspiration for wanting to be part of the game, to play the game. I couldn't barely skate forwards when I first started playing and then took lessons, but my brother was my inspiration. And so I asked him, hey, you know, what questions would you ask? And one of them, very tellingly, was about what is different about the goaltending equipment now that has changed the game? What's the different technology now?
Yeah, the foams are better. They're a ton lighter. I mean, a set of goalie pads when I played was probably right around 22, 23 pounds. Now they weigh maybe 4.
Whoa.
So wow. You're lugging that around. Anything that hits you on the arms hurt.
No matter what.
From September through to about July, your arms are black and blue. Your chest is black and blue. That's just the way it was.
And then you had the Jason mask thing. That wasn't cushioning anything.
You can't see through that.
Like, you can see perfect. It's just like looking right now because it's so tight to your face.
It's just right there, but no cushion.
I get a little piece of foam on your nose. That's about it.
It's just plastic.
The biggest difference was you didn't get cut. It still felt like somebody hit you over the head with a baseball bat.
But just didn't break the skin, so geez.
Yeah.
So no need for police involvement.
You can put ice on it and away you go.
Are they using Kevlar now, or what's...
Back then, there was a little bit of Kevlar. So you had Kevlar in your forehead, just above the eyes. But all the masks now are Kevlar, and they're all built where when it hits, everything pops. The snaps all pop. So it absorbs all the cushioning.
Got it. What's the hardest hit you ever took? I got you.
Dude.
You're telling me like this.
What the heck?
Hardest one I got. We've got a couple of good ones. So...
Not one in particular comes to mind?
Not one in particular. Kicked on the end of the nose once, taking a slap shot square between the eyes. So, but no concussions back then. They were just headaches.
No, that's right.
Exactly.
Right. So did you ever take one? I mean, now that, you know, we all know that the neck is an
I got one puck in the throat in practice one day.
Oh.
Doesn't feel very good.
Well, didn't...
Things swell up a little bit.
Yeah.
But with what's happened in today's game, so Clint Malarchuk, I played junior against him, grew up playing against him. When he got his throat slit, I switched to wearing a turtleneck that our trainer, Barry Stafford, had sewn ballistic nylon into just for that purpose, just in case.
Smart.
And then I wore that the rest of my career.
So smart.
So the biggest knock on is, yeah, it's hot, it's uncomfortable, but...
Saves your life.
You can adjust.
Yeah. I always keep thinking, like, because they're trying to come up with new ways. My mind goes back to the nights where they'd have the chain links and, like, why not, like...
The chain mail?
Yeah, why not, like, let's have something similar to that. It's loose, it moves, but yet when, you know, you can't puncture it, I don't know.
Now they got Kevlar.
I don't know. Like,
they make a full suit now, literally.
A full suit?
From your ankles all the way up, where it'll probably come to just underneath your chin.
So if the blade hits any part, you're good.
You won't get cut.
Wow. But if you have chili before the game,
so
you got problems.
Yeah, it's going to be a little hotter. You probably get dehydrated a little easier.
Yeah.
So it's all about figuring that out and managing that.
Wow.
Well, thanks in part to watching you play, when I play, because I played defense because that's all I could do. I had no shot at all. I wore a turtleneck. And for lots of reasons, and one game I took... a skate to the throat, opened it wide open, and the turtleneck, you could just fold it up, let it absorb the blood, finish the game, and then go to the hospital.
And we don't recommend that, by the way.
We don't recommend that, but you
old
know.
Old-time hockey.
Old school. You inspired regular bar league guys to wear turtlenecks, is all I'm saying.
Yeah, but they were good enough to put ballistic nylon in it. So.
I did not have ballistic nylon. I had cotton. And poly is a cotton-poly blend.
It's crazy.
I know we're getting all over the place. You, among all of your successes, have obviously had some pretty rough games. You've lost some pretty important games. You've given up some pretty important goals. Do those stick with you as much as it feels like they would?
Losing never is good. The best way to describe it is losing sucks. Sucked then, sucks now. So, yeah, you remember those, but you try not to focus on those. You try and just let it go. And I've given up lots of bad goals, and you just kind of fish it out of the net, back to play.
I bring it up for the most obvious question that's coming, is that Game 7 against Hershey, overtime, and a bad bounce gets behind Joey DeCord, and the season is over. When you saw that through your goalie brain, what did you feel? What did you see?
I've seen the movie before. We had it happen in 86 against Calgary in Game 7, where we had a bad bounce. We ended up losing 3-2 in Game 7. So
been there.
I've seen the movie, and it's something you have to let go. And obviously, Joey let it go because he's having a great training camp in Seattle.
He's doing amazing. He's
amazing.
He's playing great hockey up there.
Did you talk to him after?
No, you kind of...
Sorry, dog. I'm stealing your question.
So good, though. No, you're right on point. You're right, yes.
No, you kind of let the guys have their own space because you need your own space to let it go.
Okay.
I mean, having somebody come down and say, oh, hey, by the way, all it does
is... at any point in the weekdays or weeks or months.
Did you ever like just go and talk to him, comfort him, or just be like, hey, man, this happens?
No, but the guys know if they want to talk about something, they can... call me, do whatever they
have. They?
I've talked to a couple of guys.
Was it during season, after season?
I played golf with the goalies before the season last year. Just to
fun.
And nobody could score because everybody kept covering the hole.
Right. God. Instinct. So well, I thought it was my next, because you have a unique opportunity. Like you said, you love being around the game. Like, you can't help it. It's in your DNA.
Yep.
The ice itself, being in the arena. So, I mean, have you taken on kind of a mentor role with some of these guys as you've been there in the building?
No, because when you're doing media, you want to kind of keep it separate.
Got to be neutral.
You have to be neutral.
How hard is that?
You know what? The game dictates itself.
Yes.
If you're bad, they know they're bad. Mm-hmm. They know I'm going to say they're bad. If they're good, I'm going to say they're good.
That's fair. You do call a good game that way. You will, yeah, you call it straight.
Players will always respect honesty. I mean, if you try and sugarcoat it, they know you're sugarcoating it.
It's true.
So well, they'll respect honesty from you because you've been there. From us, we're just dicks if we say
right, you know? Yeah.
So that's why we don't, yeah. I just don't, I have nothing bad to say about any of it.
But, I mean, you have those moments where you've been able to, like on the golf course, maybe impart some wisdom, yeah, maybe some mental toughness exercises, or...
They ask, I'll answer.
That's it. So, that's as far as you go.
Yep. Yeah.
You don't... Okay.
No, well. They've got a goalie coach. They've got other coaches. Sure. But if they have a question that they want me to answer, I'm happy to sit and answer
not,
it for them.
I'm a little surprised that maybe your phone isn't ringing more. Because, I mean, you've been through it. I mean, you played it at a time where the equipment wasn't the best. Social media wasn't
any real stress here
a thing.
With the year we had last year and everything, there wasn't a lot of stressful points.
True.
So, true. And this year hasn't been bad either.
No, that's true. Yeah.
More of it will probably come when they go through a bad stretch.
How long do you want to keep doing what you're doing now? For as long as they
let you? No, I'll do it as long as they let me.
That's awesome.
Or until we irritate enough people.
I don't think that's going to be the case. I don't see that's going to happen.
Be longer
yeah.
than...
No.
Yeah. A couple of the questions that people ask to ask, and I know we're bouncing around, but is there a... You know, all of the players, you talked about chemistry, you talked about the relationship, you talked about bonding and how they work together, but is there a special chemistry or a special relationship between the defenseman and the goaltender?
I don't know if it's special... You have to understand each other. I mean, if you look at the way Joey handled the puck last year, the defense have to think the same as he is because they know where to go. He knows where to move the puck. So part of when you get a new group of defensemen, like we've got three new defensemen this year, and Driggs is a different puck handler than Joey was.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a matter of everybody getting on the same page so that they understand and know where the puck's going to go, what he's going to do with it. So as a goalie, I used to try and sit in on the defenseman's meetings so that you have an idea of what they're expected to do and you can kind of play into that.
And does it change with each, because there's, what, four pairings or three pairings? Or does it change with each pairing, with each defensive pair because they're doing different things?
Well, some guys are a little more offensive. Some guys are a little bit more defense. But part of being a goalie is reading who does what. And so not only do you know the other team, you have to know your own guys.
Wow.
So... there's lots of studying and paying attention and practice and that sort of thing to figure that out.
Do you study both teams before each game?
I do.
What do you look for?
I'm just looking to see what their trends are, see who's played up in the NHL, who's new. Just trying to figure out what guys' tendencies are. I mean, you can sit and watch warm-up and you have a pretty good idea where guys want to shoot because you have a really good idea where their goalie's weakness is because they'll always shoot there because guess what? They practice against them. So you sit and you watch that and just take it all in.
It's just all so matter of fact. It's just all so casual.
Do you hang out at the arena when you're not broadcasting? Do you ever go to the games? Are you sitting, like, are you there, like, pretty faithful? Or are you at home? Like, how do you like to enjoy the games?
Our games?
Yeah.
I'm at every game.
Are you?
Oh, yeah. Because if I'm not doing TV, I'm doing radio. And some nights.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. That's right.
I'm there.
That's right.
Plus, I'll pop into the office once in a while. If they've been gone for a little while, just to see what's going on in the office and see what I'm missing.
How's that like with Evan? I mean, that guy's
Evan's awesome.
He's awesome. We know that
we're
for sure.
We're not going to keep him very long.
I know that he's going to be...
Unfortunately, I think Evan will be in the NHL not that far away from now.
I agree. Yeah. He's too good.
He's that good.
He's too good. Yeah.
That good, that prepared.
And it's effortless. It feels effortless when you listen to him, and the way he calls it is just, it's incredible.
Knows the game, studies the game.
Are you picking up and learning things from him? Are you now starting to kind of steal?
Well, I just read off of how he calls the game, which makes it really easy.
Nice.
Because he's good.
Yeah.
If your play-by-play guy is not as good, it's a little tougher to read and react to it.
True.
Whereas Evan's good, so it makes it really easy.
He is. He's, the way he does it, he paints an amazing picture when he's just calling it. You know what's going on. Like, we've not bashed, but we've kind of made comments around other announcers, and
there's some other ones that are interesting.
That's a great word. Interesting.
The Tucson guy, I don't care. I'll say it.
Wow.
That was hard to listen to.
Dave.
It was hard to listen to.
I know.
I'm learning humility and honesty.
Yeah.
Right? I'm telling you, humbly, that shit was hard to listen to.
It was, yeah. I mean, you start to see what you have, obviously, when you're with.
You realize you're spoiled.
Yes, and we are. We've talked about this multiple times with the arena, with the staff, the front office, the apparel, the mascot, the broadcasting. Sorry, some flowers heading your way because it's true. The way you guys call the games, the way you and Gino are between periods when it's televised. I mean, all the things that we're doing. Even the concessions are really good. I mean, it's just
Everything they've done is first class.
Yeah.
I mean, there's NHL buildings that are worse than this.
That was going to ask you about
that. They've run worse. This organization's been first class top to bottom.
That's incredible.
What's the worst NHL building you've been in?
Used to be the old Boston Garden.
Okay. Really?
Why?
It's just old.
Just old. Yeah.
You get old, you get rats running around. The old Madison Square Garden had rats running around.
Jeez.
Yeah, but they live there, so that's their, you know. They paid rent. What I throw myself off sometimes.
I know, too.
Who has the worst, NHL-wise, when you were playing? Certainly not today.
Yeah.
Who was, like, the worst? Like, the fans are like, oh, man, I hate playing there. The fans are the worst.
Oh, let's see. The worst. Philly's always up there.
Yeah.
Not sure why they call it the City of Brotherly Love, but.
They're a hard fan base.
They're hardcore.
They'll boo their own guys.
Yeah.
Oh, no. They turn on their own guys in a hurry.
Yeah.
But they're pretty hardcore. The Ranger fans can be pretty hardcore.
I love the – I was a big Rangers fan, though, back in the day. I loved them. But I never went to a game and never threw a bottle on the ice or whatever they do there.
You get pretty nasty.
And you played over the course of your career for, like, what, six
teams.
So – now you have a broader spectrum. Who are the best fans you played in front of?
Outside of,
I'm kind of partial because of Edmonton. Fighters. Only because I grew up there.
Yeah.
St. Louis was really good.
Hmm.
The Canadian cities are all very knowledgeable, so it's a different type of fan base.
Okay.
The buildings are a little bit quieter because everybody knows so much. So they cheer when they are appreciative of something, but they're not going to go overboard. Whereas a lot of the U.S. cities... fans are enthusiastic.
Dude, we cheer for everything.
So has that been something that stood out in our arena, the way we react? I understand that we don't do some of the traditional things. Like, we boo when the other team scores. And in hockey, especially with Canadians, that's not something
you... We don't boo. People in the arena boo. We don't.
Right.
We're arena. Classic.
I don't mind that.
But, I mean, that's...
Canadian city, it just goes quiet.
We do some non-traditional things, right?
Like, some non-traditional market. So you're going to have some different things.
Let's lean into that. I love
that. Which I kind of like that.
Yeah.
I mean, L.A. was like that.
Okay.
You look at the Florida, Tampa. They were all like that in the beginning. But as they've started to have success and such, it's all kind of changed to a hockey mentality.
Mm.
I mean, Tampa played in a football stadium, the old dome.
Oh, yeah.
So.
You're going back.
Yeah.
Wow.
So we've seen some interesting buildings.
I'm curious to see them where I do think about that, how what we're going to look like, not what we're going to look like, but I'm just saying our fan base
10 years from now,
5-10 years from now, when, you know, it isn't as new and shiny and we've gone through some things. And of course, we're going to have a cup in the building at some point. But when we've gotten a little more educated and maybe the next generation starts to, you know, kind of take the mantle and be interesting,
which is where the Firebirds have done a good job of trying to grow the game from the ground up. And that's how you get your future fan base, is you have to get the kids interested. So now you got to get the kids in the building, get them to see the game, get them to want to play street hockey, then you get them in rollerblades, then you get them on the ice. And that's how you create your future fan base.
Well, I've mentioned it before, and I'm going to say it again, but I truly believe that there's going to be probably more Hispanic hockey players coming out of Coachella Valley. I mean, all kinds. But well,
you're seeing it in Phoenix now.
Mm-hmm. But so I really think this is going to be a place where, because it's been exposed to all the kids, not just Hispanics, but I mean everybody. But I mean, because it was something that was never here before. So now they're going to see a different sport that they're falling in love with. I think we're going to see a lot of people in the NHL coming out of Coachella Valley.
Oh, you're going to see more. You're going to see more and more players.
It's going to be insane. I mean,
they used to have a little half rink here. That was about it.
Yes, and that was before my time.
Then we had what? Ice castles?
Something like that. Over in Cat City, and now, well, now we got probably the nicest public ice in the state.
Yeah,
well, yeah.
Yeah. So.
So it's
pretty impressive.
You can see the transition starting to grow.
Yeah.
And that's what you like, and you see more and more kids. Like, I'll sit in the office and watch public skating. You see more and more kids starting to skate.
Yes.
And.
It's fun.
It's contagious.
It is contagious. Yeah, you're right.
Again, we're going all over the place. I want to get to some of my buddies. So David Borsari again. Are you familiar with a maneuver called the Michigan spin?
The Michigan move? Yeah.
Yeah, where they put the puck on the blade and they dance around.
In the 80s, you'd lost an arm if you tried that.
So that's what we wanted to be said. Is it practical? David Borsari wants to know, is that practical in shootouts? And does anybody ever actually do it in a real game?
There's a couple of guys that have tried it. But the minute you try that, you're going to have to pay a price later on. Goalies don't like it. Defensemen don't like it.
Mm.
So somewhere along the way, in the 80s, a guy like Billy Smith.
Explain what it is. Tell us what it is.
So basically, you're putting the puck on your stick and basically trying to pick it up and flip it in like a lacrosse goal.
Yeah.
A guy like Billy Smith would have chopped your arm off before you ever got the opportunity.
Ooh.
So...
Why don't they like it so much? Let's talk.
It's considered a bit of a hot dog move.
You're showboating.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you ever had one, somebody try to do it on you?
Oh, no. I played in an era where you wouldn't try that.
I love that.
Somebody probably would have cross-checked you shoulders up.
Ooh. Oh, right on.
So there's a price to pay.
His other question, and this is the kind of guy he is. The other question is, goaltenders keep a water bottle on the net, right, to hydrate during the game, and occasionally some of your own players might hit off it. Have you ever had an opposing player hit off your water bottle?
No, my first 10 years we didn't have water bottles on the net. You had to wait for a break in the play to go to the bench to get water.
Jeez. This is real men, real iron horses playing hockey, man.
These kids
are babies. They're babies.
Can't barbecue. You don't even know. You don't even know what.
Can't measure for Draves.
They don't even know what they're doing.
The game changed a little. All of a sudden, there's all this healthy stuff.
Yeah?
I guess. Darn healthy stuff.
We're evolving.
Kevin Rose wants to know if you're more proud of the Stanley Cup or your Vezina trophy.
Both. Stanley Cup obviously is a team deal. The Vezina is pretty much a team deal as well. Because,
Vezina, sorry, I pronounced it wrong. Yeah.
Yeah, because you've got the help of the guys. But yeah, they're both special.
Got it. Carry on. What you got?
Is it somewhere in your house?
Actually, it's sitting up in Edmonton at a buddy of mine's.
Really? Why is it hiding in his house?
Well, I haven't moved it down here yet.
Okay. I was just curious. Why.
Well, you know you're going to be here a while.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Well, up until a few years ago, I had a condo up in Edmonton.
Okay.
So I still kept the place up there.
How long have you been in the Valley?
15 years now.
Oh, so you're in. You're
hard. We're not going up to the snow. I can visit snow.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, being from the Northwest, I just go up to visit. Oh, this is fun, and then I get out when
4 days of cold and miserable. That's good.
Just enough. Get bundled up. Like, oh, yeah, now I remember why I live where I live. Yeah. And then I'm going to just switch gears completely. You've got a golf charity that you do.
Yeah, it's just a charity that my wife and I used to travel about 180 days a year for charity stuff.
Wow.
So we decided that instead of raising money for other people all over the place, we live here. We should probably start a golf tournament, raise some money here.
And who is it for?
So we do it for the children's program over at the Betty Ford Center.
That's amazing.
Which most people don't even know about it.
That's why I wanted you to go ahead and speak on it.
And that's the fun thing is people don't realize that kids have that issue. Kids whose parents have that issue. They've got a program over there for them that people don't even know is there.
So what made you get into that? Like, why did your heart head that direction?
We used to, when I played with the Oilers in the early 80s, we'd come out here and see President Ford. A little golf outing with him, get to see Mrs. Ford. Myself, a few of the teammates have made a trip through the Betty Ford Center. So.
So you have?
I went through in 89. So and I played the era of sex, drugs, and rock and roll.
No, I understand. But not a lot of people, number one, are comfortable. And I think you're at that stage where you're comfortable talking about it. But
perfectly comfortable with it.
Yeah, and I think it's also you're a great example of, you know, your behaviors in a certain period of your life don't define you.
No. Your past doesn't define who you are. You get to improve on that every day.
Is that part of where that mental toughness and being thankful comes from is through
going? Oh, yeah. Once you've gone through that and you realize, okay, yeah, I was an idiot for a little while. A happy idiot, but still an idiot. Then you realize that, hey, you know what? Life has to change a little bit. You have to make some directional changes. And making the directional changes, life gets better.
What's been the best part about going through that and that sobriety and feeling that other side of it? Like, what is the best part of all that?
Yeah, you get up happy every day. Hmm. I mean, that's the beauty. The sun comes up, you're happy every day. There are no bad days.
It's true.
Gratitude on your side of the street.
I love that.
Yep.
And so that's why your charity then, you're pouring back into that.
Yeah, then I live 8 minutes from there.
That's great. No, and well, it's convenient. Oh, no, I love that. Yeah, because I've seen...
We'll go over and do some stuff for the Betty Ford Center. I sit on the board in Canada for the Betty Ford Center. So
good for you. I had a friend...
It's all about giving back.
Oh, and I think that's where your heart is, right? So you strike me as that kind of guy where, obviously... You don't take anything too serious. You never, it doesn't seem like you really have. You enjoy the moments, but you haven't really let it consume.
I've enjoyed life. I won't. Yeah. We've not taken life real seriously sometimes, yeah. Which is part of where the problem started.
Part of the problem.
But no, I enjoy life.
Good for you.
I mean, you can sit and, again, you can dwell on all the bad things that have happened, which if you jump on social media, they'll remind you of all the bad things you've done, mm-hmm. which I get a kick out of sometimes because you'll get the odd person wants to run down that road, and then you just kind of lead them along the garden path, and everybody else jumps in.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, you know, I'm okay with it. It's not really bothering me. And we've accomplished a little bit over the last 35 years, so it doesn't bother me one bit.
Yeah.
And all of the lives you've probably saved.
Yeah.
Well, the runaround, so when I first moved down here, I made the mistake, asked my wife if she liked to travel, and she made the big mistake of saying yes. So we did 120 days the first year, going to different events and wow. raising money, and then the next year it went to 140. And then for the next eight years after that, we started to do 180 to 200 days a year. And she finally just said, hey, hold it. We're getting burnt out here.
Yeah.
Somebody's got to feed
That's
the cats.
A lot, man.
Somebody's got to feed the dogs.
No kidding.
Well, we added a dog this year, so that curtailed a little travel. But we still managed to do probably 10 to 12 events a year.
And
incredible.
Still giving back. You got this, you got that, you're doing all your stuff. And I just can't, like my mind goes immediately to all of the families you've kept together and the lives you've saved that you'll never know about.
Nope.
And don't need to.
Don't need to
just,
know.
Just to know that it happened is enough.
Don't need any credit for it. You just, as long as you can make a difference, life is good.
I love that.
That should be everyone's mantra too, right?
I love that.
As long and it's easy to forget in the stressful day in, day out, bills and taxes and whatever. Mm-hmm. But that's I think after this discussion is going to be a mindset that I now try to adopt. And we'll see how I am at it. We'll see next week how well I did. We'll grade on it.
But, I'll hold you to it.
You know, it's hard. It's hard not to be cynical in this world for any number of reasons.
Mass society's gotten a little, well, how should we put it, screwed up.
That's
in the last little while.
Yeah.
In ways I never imagined.
Ways I've never thought I would see in my lifetime.
Hmm. And listen, you've seen
and
some.
And I'm old.
Yeah, and you've seen some stuff in your life, right?
I've seen a lot.
There was, for example, the country club.
Yeah, in right? Buffalo.
That
that was a new one.
Yeah.
Hey.
Your teammates are part of a country club. You go to join the country club, and somehow they, lose your paperwork, or they was a clerical error.
They just
can't get in.
Not their type of person.
And
back then, you're like, well, shit, that's, you know, these are the, we're getting better.
Well, in Canada, we didn't have that issue. You didn't see a lot of it. Mm. So as soon as we jumped across the border, all of a sudden, there it is, front and center. And it was like, okay, this is new. So instead of getting mad and all this, I just went and joined another country club.
Right. Wouldn't Groucho Marx say any club that had me as a member, I wouldn't join?
So then when they came back and said, well, we've changed our mind. We'd like you to come back.
Nope.
I was like, you know what? I'm good. But thank you anyway.
Yeah.
You made your bed. You get to lie in it.
Hmm. And that was bad enough. But now looking at the world today, you're like, well, geez, who would have thought we'd have gotten where we got now? So
no, the worst part is it's gotten backwards.
Exactly. It's gone backwards. So I think if each of us individually can maintain that mindset, maybe little by little it starts to get better again.
Yeah, we're back to where we were in the 50s and 60s, which is a really sad state of where things are at.
So that's a new subject. I don't even want, that's like, that's a whole other.
See, it's not a boring life.
Yeah. All right, the Battle of Alberta.
Yeah.
Kevin Rose wants to know if that was a great rivalry or just another game.
Oh, no. It's a great rivalry. It's a rivalry from the time you're a kid. So it's...
And so tell everyone what it is.
So Battle of Alberta, Calgary, Edmonton, the cities are, give or take, oh, I don't know, 100 miles apart. Everybody in Edmonton hates Calgary. Everybody in Calgary hates Edmonton. So the games have some sensitivity to them.
Ooh.
Even the fans have sensitivity to them.
Oh, my gosh.
Love that.
Okay.
Oh, no,
so it's real. It's very real.
Oh, it's real, and it's not as... sensitive as it used to be, but it's still real. The games were wars. If you jump on YouTube and Google some of the Battle of Alberta games, old time hockey at its finest.
Eddie Shore, do it now. Yeah, Google
some of the brawls and such. They were good.
Right on. What else you got?
Oh man, I don't know. You've got questions.
I could go on for days.
Well, I think we need to.
These are just for me.
I want to get into. Let's get ready to land the plane a little bit here. So, this season's new. I kind of want to, you know, let's just fast forward a little bit.
It's been a minute. I'm gonna get a little popcorn over here. Don't mind me.
So this season, you know, we barely touched on a little bit. But what are you excited about with the new team, where they're headed? Some things that you're looking at, and you know, what do you see that you're excited for?
I'm excited to see this group once they finally come together. I mean, I think we've improved the forward group, which I didn't think you would say coming out of last year. But you had a guy like Marion Studenich, big offensive talent.
Coming on, man.
You've got Potts back. You've got Max back.
Yeah.
Cole's back.
Yeah.
So they're all going to get better. You got Fleury in the back end, Carrick in the back end. I think Otto Vinen's going to be really good.
Yeah.
And that Logan Morrison, dude, that guy.
He's coming on
the
fire.
The kids are really good.
So we got talent.
We've got talent.
Yeah, we got and then
Winterton's going to be really good.
He is good. Yeah, we saw
Melanson's, once he figures out, he's still going to play with a little bit of bite. So he's, once they get adjusted, seems going
to
be good.
I've heard people say, and I think I agree with this too, but it sounds to me, and people are whispering, you know, we're almost set up to look better this year than we were last year.
I think there's a good chance of that. It's just a matter of everybody kind of meshing as a team.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody goes through trials and tribulations through the course of a season. The fact that we're doing it early doesn't bother me at all.
Great. Let's get
it
out of
the way.
Is that
the only thing that's missing, you think?
That's part of it. And you're not spending 20 games on the road together.
I was going to say, should we just send them out on the road for 20 games and put them in hotels? And
like, what do we do?
Maybe you come home, there's families, there's different distractions and such, so it takes a little bit longer to mesh as a team. But this group could be better than last year's group.
I've heard it, and I'm like, that blows my mind to think about.
I love that thought, and I think everybody should take that to heart.
Yeah.
No, Troy's done a good job of going out and recruiting, and you'd like to have the same guys back, but at the same time, he's added some really good pieces.
Yeah.
For sure. I mean, and look... In the AHL, you don't get to have the same guys back. It's just not the nature of this beast.
It's not how it works.
Yeah, we're foster parents, and we get them for as long as we get them.
Yeah.
And as we are recording this, Porkchop, Podorowski is up.
He's in Seattle.
And I know he's probably coming back, but I hope he doesn't. I hope he stays up there, has success up there, lives his best life up there.
Well, in a perfect world, if you're Dan Bylsma, the more guys that go up and stay there, the better job you're doing here.
Yeah.
And clearly, that's right? That's what you like to see, is you like to see the guys from here go out and play in Seattle.
Yeah.
And then a new group comes in and you get that nice rollover. But at the same time, they're trying to build a winning culture here. And that's how you recruit guys, is by building the culture that, hey, yeah, you're in the American League, but you're still expected to win. And they've done a really good job of establishing that so far.
I think so. We've talked about that. I mean, we were so excited to hear that Dan, Jessica, Stu was coming back. So, I mean, that was a big, big deal. And the culture that they had set for last year, and then any new person coming in through that building understands the winning mentality.
It takes a little bit of time to establish a culture.
Yeah. I mean,
last year, you got to remember, it's year one.
I know. We're not even a year deep. We're still 11 months.
Yeah, we're not even a year in.
We're not even a year in yet.
So it's going to take a little bit of time for that to get established, but they've done a really good job of getting it started.
Yeah.
And there's expectations.
And there are.
That's how the team gets better.
I love it.
And if you could offer them some advice right now, aside from what you've already said, what would it be?
Just play. Everybody goes through ups and downs. I mean, that's just the nature of the game. And you don't worry about it. You don't stress over it. You just go out and play and do your best. It's all going to turn in the right direction. It's too talented a team not to.
Yeah, I think so.
I think so, too.
I agree. Yeah.
What do you see around the league, though, in our division?
Our division got better.
I mean,
everybody got a little bit better.
I think they did.
Who are the teams to watch out for now?
I think Ontario's going to – they're playing better. Mm-hmm. Tucson's better than last year.
Bakersfield's better.
Calgary's good.
Yeah.
Bakersfield just plays us hard for some reason.
Yeah.
San Diego's still got some demons, but they're a better team than they were last year. So it's the only team that maybe didn't get better was San Jose.
Interesting. Do you think
that's organizational wide because they're rebuilding everything?
Do you feel like people are coming in? I mean, it's an obvious question.
Go ahead, ask it.
But do you feel like those teams coming into our arena, coming into our house, we have a bigger bullseye, so we're getting the best of the best when they show up and play us?
Oh, no, we're going to get the best of everybody.
That's what
just
I
think. Because there's no surprises this year. Yeah. Last year, they thought, okay, expansion team, we can just saunter in, they'll be okay.
But now it's...
We were actually good.
We're getting everybody's
this year,
A game.
We're good, but everybody else is now bringing their A game.
This is what it feels like. Like that Ontario game, my gosh, they came in with some physicality. They came to really send a message, it felt like.
We still should have won the game.
I agree. I agree.
That's the only game that we really shouldn't have won was the last one against Calgary. All the other home games we should have won. We played good enough to win.
You're right. We played better.
And all of a sudden we've seen goalies look all world.
Yep. Pucks just hasn't really gotten the net.
No. Calvin Pickard played great opening night. We lose 3-2 on a couple of defensive mistakes.
Yeah.
Calgary plays us as soon as they get that the goal lead. They just shut the neutral zone down, and we have a tough time with that, which now every team knows that. And so you're seeing more and more of it.
So now we got to coach against it.
Well, now you just got to get out to the lead.
Yeah.
Playing from behind gets hard sometimes.
I noticed last night in Vegas, in Henderson especially, they were playing hard and skating fast, and they were taking shots.
Mm-hmm.
It just wasn't going in.
They're not going in.
What do you do about that?
Well, a lot of our shots are from the outside right now. We're not getting a lot of high traffic areas in front of the net, and you're not getting a lot of faces in front of the goalie.
Okay.
So the goalies are seeing it. Well, goalies see it. They're pretty good. They're going to make some saves. And they'll have that in Tucson again coming up.
Yeah, because they're going to have those
back-to-back nights.
Back-to-back, which are not...
Those are not fun.
Favorable.
Those will be spirited games.
Yeah.
And then you've got Ontario, who's actually playing really good hockey. Coming in here Tuesday.
And you're going to be broadcasting that night, right?
I am doing TV and radio on Tuesday.
Yeah, you're going to be...
Drink lots of water.
Yeah, so that's going to be fun for you. Are you having the most fun that you've had in a while or ever, I guess, doing what you're doing now?
I don't know about ever. Playing's pretty good.
What's that?
Playing's pretty good. But outside of playing, I'm having fun with this.
Outside of playing.
We're coming in for a landing, but such a storied... career with so many pieces and parts and such adoration, do you miss it? Do you wish just one more time you could throw the pads on and play one more game?
No, I'm good. We did the original outdoor game in 2003. I played in that. It was fun and everything. Getting up the next day, not that much fun anymore. Here's a really good reminder as to why we don't do that.
So then you have done it. You've achieved it. if you're not longing to go back to it, because you've done what there is to do.
I don't need to put the gear back on.
You have reached that. In my mind, that is success.
Yeah.
That's by definition success.
Yeah, it's a good start to it. And there's still lots left in life. So.
And you get to start something new. You are now a broadcaster from saying two words and calling other fans names.
It was actually our own
doing TV and radio in the same game.
It was actually our own fans. Yeah. That's what makes it worse.
But
no, life gives you different opportunities. So you try and take each opportunity and grow off of it. And that's the fun of it all. I mean, would I put the gear on if I had to? I probably still could. Would I do it?
I can't imagine such an emergency where you would have to.
Actually, it almost happened when I was doing HDNet. One of the goalies went down for one of the teams, and they always look for somebody in the building. They just happened to be in the building.
Wait, there was a story about a guy.
So the NHL now has to have an emergency goalie around, which I don't know if they do in the American League or not, whether they've got an emergency, or they call them e-bugs. So I don't know if there's an e-bug in the American Hockey League or not.
Well, it's either you or Ed Heathouse.
Yeah.
But there was just recently a story. It was like the Zamboni driver or something.
Carolina.
Yeah. Really? And now he's got a job. Really? He's so good. Now he's got a job.
Both Carolina's goalies got hurt in Toronto.
No kidding.
And the Zamboni driver jumped in.
And did well enough to
put
get
on
a job.
Sweaty-ass wet equipment.
That's a Hollywood story right there, man.
Played pretty good, too.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. I don't know.
Oh, that's...
I would like, honestly, I think at some point, I would like to put it on. I would love to put on the gear just to get a feel for it, all of it. I would love to, and just sit in, not that I would, maybe take one time, but I would like to see what that's like. I think
we got to find you a new set of gear, like the modern day gear, and then a set of the old gear.
I'll do it.
Then you'll get an appreciation for it.
I'll do it. I thought it would always be interesting because it just looks so cumbersome. And the gloves, I've worn the gloves once. Somebody bought them at auction. I tried them on. That was a different feel. I'm like, this is different. Weird. I would love to see what that's all like. I think that would be a great perspective. I think it would be fun to do. And, yes, I would love to wear the old stuff.
The old stuff's a lot of fun.
I think that would be great.
People don't realize how heavy it actually was.
I can take it. But
so all settled in, it's probably 35 pounds. To
my God.
And then it gets wet, so by the end of the game,
you're leaking everywhere. It's
dry maybe 10 days a year. The rest of the time, it's wet.
Oh, my gosh.
And you got to lug that around. There's no, you're playing juniors. Nobody's lugging that around for you.
Juniors, you're lugging it. Pros, you're spoiled.
You got Sherpas.
You're spoiled in the pros. They drag it around for you.
Jeez, it is like the knight's armor.
Probably.
Jeez.
Yeah. Probably.
It'd be fun though. I think that'd be a blast one day, if it ever the opportunity comes.
I'll do it at a fantasy camp.
Take a tennis ball machine, shoot tennis balls at you so they only sting a little bit.
Heck yeah, let's go. Let's go.
I'll watch, dude. I'll totally watch. I've played. I've been hit by pie. I've been hit.
I've never had that. That's what I'm saying. Yeah, I've never put the gear on. I've skated. I know how to skate, but I never wore the gear, so I don't know.
I had a buddy of mine do it in Buffalo when I was playing. We took a tennis ball machine.
Oh, nice.
After he put the gear on and fired the first one by his ear.
Was he?
He was over it quickly.
He was out. He's like, I'm good, man.
Professional golfer. So when the tennis ball went by his ear, he was done.
Okay. Well, I'll stand in there one time. I'll stand in there one time.
I'll watch. I'll take pictures.
I hope so. I'd hope you'd be there for that.
I'd be there for you.
Funny part is, tennis ball wouldn't hurt.
Probably not now.
You could hit you. No, even then. Hit you in the mask, it wouldn't hurt.
I can't imagine it would.
But just seeing it go by.
Oof.
Which is what you'll get when you sit behind the net. When the puck's hit the glass,
the
goal is not to jump.
You just got to sit there and take it.
Yeah. Or go down during warm-up.
That's a good idea. That's a great idea. Yeah, usually we're on the sides, but that's a great idea. Okay.
All right, let's go to rapid fire.
Yeah, so this is how we're landing the plane. This is what we do. We do a set of rapid fire, and then this is how we're going to end the show. Nothing too intense, but...
Very James Lipton.
Yeah, it's Lipton inspired. Gino caught that. He's the only one that he got me, dude. I didn't steal completely from him, but it is where I borrowed the inspiration. So, what's your go-to food at the arena? Have you concessions wise? The milkshake.
Where
do you get the milkshake? Oh, at the ice cream. Yeah,
right behind me.
Yep.
Good to know. I haven't had one.
Oh, they're outstanding.
Really?
Oh, we got to have one now.
Good to know. What's your go-to meal in the Valley? What's your restaurant go-to meal?
Depends what I'm looking for. If I'm going for Mexican, I'll go to Fresh Agave. If I'm going for Italian, I'll go to Castelli's. Going for a steak, I'll go to Mastro's.
You're a veteran.
So
of the game.
I kind of aimlessly wander to where good food is.
Yeah, I love it. Well, there's a lot of it out here. That's one thing.
There's no shortage of good food.
Gosh, man, when I moved out here, I was like, holy cow, this is great. You know, what's on your radio come game day? Is there anything that you're listening to getting you ready, prepared, or do you just like to listen
whatever,
to get you in the mood?
Whatever playlist I've got going on my phone at that time.
What do you got going on
what's
now?
What's on today?
What's happening?
I don't know. I've got, 2,200 or 2,300 songs on my phone right now. So
what's your genre?
A little of everything.
Rock and roll.
What was in the car when you parked? When you came in and parked?
What did I have today? A relaxing playlist going.
Nice. So,
are
you a hip hop guy too?
Like Boss,
you
got Gags, Kenny G,
some Commodores.
Okay. What else we have on that playlist? There's some Travis Scott. There's Sade.
Yeah.
It bounces all over the place.
Get it. All right, Grant. That's a good answer. What does a treat yourself day look like for Grant Fuhr?
I'm probably going to spoil myself and go to the golf course.
That's easy one.
It's either golf course or golf shop, one or the other.
Okay. Yeah, you've got a big passion for that. I know a lot of hockey players. Why does that translate so well? What is the deal with that?
Bottom of the swing, same as shooting a puck.
Makes sense. It's incredible. All right. This will be interesting. Are you a DC or an MCU guy? Now, if I need to explain it, I can't.
I was just going to say, define DC and MCU.
Okay.
I told you every time I tell
not every time. Every Gino time. Got it. Gino did get
Gino,
it.
Well, Gino took a second. But he
only
because
his
right.
daughter.
That's true.
So they're superheroes. So you got DC, which is Superman, Wonder Woman, Batman, and then the MCU, you know, like the Avengers, Iron Man, Thor.
No, I would go DC.
You're DC.
Yeah.
Who's your favorite superhero?
Spider-Man.
A lot of Spider-Mans, dude. Everybody, yeah, I think Batman and Spider-Man so far have been the most popular answer.
That's what I grew up with.
Yeah, that makes sense. Did you ever watch the show back when it was on TV?
I did.
I did, too.
I did. Giggle like a little kid.
I do, man. It's just because I just fall back into that eight-year-old whatever, you know, watching TV. I do. I love this stuff. That's why I put it on here. What other profession than being a goalie would you have liked to try or done?
I played a couple years of professional golf. So that's kind of my next path. Other than hockey, golf's my passion.
Nice.
So we've played a little bit of professional golf, worked in the golf business.
So that you could approach be your... it the same way, just have fun?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's all you can do.
You have to, right?
Golf especially.
Yeah.
I mean, you can have it one day and it just disappears the next.
Isn't that weird?
That's the beauty of that game.
God. It's the love-hate relationship that we have with that game.
Yeah, I mean, you'll never, ever master it.
Right.
That's what makes it fun.
Yeah, I agree. That and poker. It's like you could do the same thing the same way, same time, but, I mean, there's those variables or something changes.
Yeah.
Anything
changes. The variable is the size of your stack.
Yeah, well, or who's next to you. Yeah. Or, you know, it's just, you know, one day you're in it, you're in the zone, you can read everything, and the next day it's just nothing.
You know, he's never invited me to come play at his house.
It's coming, Dave. I think it's actually happening soon. No, it's coming.
Never
it is.
Invited me.
It's, you're coming.
I'd play.
I know you will. All right, what's your favorite curse word?
It depends on the situation.
What's your go-to? There's always that one in the holster.
You'd have been
there's
a great
silver
lawyer.
Bullet.
I'm telling you, you'd have been a great lawyer.
Oh, and
I have no set go-to. It all depends on the situation.
Okay, you just gave up. You're in the playoffs.
On the ice, if I gave up a goal, none at all. Because that goes against your body language again.
You're in the car. Somebody cuts you off. You're in a hurry. You're trying to get home.
Dude, nothing gets this guy.
Then we can get a long sentence going.
Well, this is the advisory. Moms, dads, go ahead and turn down the radio at this point.
We'd probably call him a stupid motherfucker.
Yes.
Something along the way.
Yes. That's a good one.
Which is not really, you know, truth is a defense, so.
You're right, though. The stupid adding on. Yeah absolutely. I think that's the
statement. And the worse the cutoff, the longer the string.
Yeah, pretty much you just keep adding to it.
You just add to it. All day long.
Well, that's great, man. Well, you know what? We ask our guests of this every single time, so we're going to ask you, would you be willing, did you have fun, and are you willing to come back and do the show again?
Oh, hell yeah.
Nice.
Because I still got like two pages I didn't,
we didn't even get it. And I think there's so much there, but Grant, or Gino, this is
Grant.
Honestly, this is really been amazing. And for our Thanksgiving special, I think people are really going to enjoy this. So really, honestly, thank you so much.
Yeah, seriously.
My pleasure.
No, this has been, this has been a blast. We do need to get a Go Birds from you.
Oh, yeah. Oh, definitely.
So give us a Go Birds. Give us your best.
Go Birds. And hey, make it happen on Tuesday.
Ooh, yeah. Make it happen. Go Birds.
That's going in the promo.
Go Birds.
Yeah, I'm gonna that's gonna go out tonight. All right, go Birds. That's it.
Growing up, nobody wanted to play goal. I thought the equipment looked cool.
I watched Grant play. He wasn't very good. I said, I'm not drafting this guy.
I don't block shots. But we need a better goalie.
When I'm at the rink, it was my sanctuary.
He was never black to us.
And once I'm on the ice, I control everything that I do.
Listen, I've said it before. He's the greatest goalie ever lived.
You don't win Stanley Cups without having a good goalie.
We were lucky to have Grant to lead us out of that dressing room.
One of the best goalies ever, and then one of the hardest guys to score on.
The city lives and dies by the Oilers. I can see that grinding on somebody like Grant.
It was revealed he had a substance abuse problem.
Banishment from the NHL for drug use.
He's always denied it.
You're all of 20-some years old. You're not supposed to have chest pains and have panic. You play in the National Hockey League. But hard time. Somebody turned off. You don't panic on the ice. Why is everything kind of coming unglued?
There's a lot of shame attached to being suspended.
I have nothing but admiration. Faced his demons, made a comeback, and not only made a comeback, but he got back to the top of his game and top of his sport.
Here's this guy that I didn't want to be on the team when we first drafted him, to becoming one of the best goaltenders ever to play, first black guy to get in the Hockey Hall of Fame.
Hockey's the greatest sport on earth, and the biggest thing that I've taken away from is there's so many good people in the game.
Well, that was fun. If you're enjoying the Firebirds Fan Zone podcast on YouTube, be sure to drop a comment down below and hit that like button. Also, remember to subscribe and turn on notifications so you never miss out when a new episode drops. The Firebirds Fan Zone podcast is available on Spotify, Amazon, Apple, and a whole bunch of other podcast platforms. So however you get your weekly dose of the Firebirds Fan Zone podcast, we invite you to share it across all your socials. And you can follow us on Instagram at Firebirds Fan Zone podcast. And on Facebook, just search, guess what? Firebirds Fan Zone podcast. The Firebirds Fan Zone podcast is brought to you by Kyle Garman Realtor. Whether you're buying or selling, whether it's for your forever home or that quiet desert vacation getaway, Kyle Garman and the team at Keller Williams have the experience and skill to make that process simple and convenient. Check them out today at kylegarman.kw.com. Our podcast is also brought to you by DesertDefenseLawyers.com, DUI and criminal defense throughout the Coachella Valley. The criminal justice system is scary and confusing, but relief is just a click away at DesertDefenseLawyers.com. We've been keeping folks out of the penalty box since 2008.